You're locked on to the big show. Calgary Sports Talk in the afternoon. Okay, smart speaker, play Sportsnet 960.
Hope you enjoyed the Jays. Welcome to the program. Welcome to the big show. We're on until 7 tonight. Steinberg, Nault, Logo with you. We'll get everything kind of on time at the top of the hour, bring you headlines. Lots to get to before we wrap at 7 o'clock. The Jays do it again, my friend. And they take 2 of 3 from the team that if they win game 163, if they make it, that's the team that they'll almost certainly be playing in the postseason. The last time they meet, 2 of 3 at the Rogers Center. This role just keeps on going. You called it last night going into the second game against the Rays. You know, maybe the Jays bats go cold. I think I watched pretty much the entire thing. I missed maybe an inning last night of the Jays and the Rays, and they hit the ball hard. They just a little unlucky and weren't able to find anything. Got it back today. This Jays team's hard to keep down for too long, even after a night where their bats go cold.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, hasn't been a banner year for Michael Wacha, but yeah, I think that...
Wacha!
I think this is a team that can very clearly hit the ball, has one of the best offenses in Major League Baseball, and flex their muscles in 2 of 3 games here in this series. And I think you've got to like where things are at. And I talked about not only will the bats at some point go cold, but how do you bounce back when they go cold? And, you know, it's about as good of a bounce back as you can get today, scoring 6 runs against the Rays. And now you head into, a day off, which is going to be very important for this team. Is, you know, the conversation.
Big weekend coming up after that.
The conversation now becomes, you know, this team as you get into next week. I think it was Ben Nicholson-Smith of Sportsnet putting it out there. It's only a matter of time here. You don't want to get ahead of yourselves, Pat, but the Blue Jays at some point are going to try and line up their rotation so that, you know, if they have to play a game 162, potentially a game 163 for some sort of tiebreak, and then the wild card, you know, those 3 games could come in 3 days in succession. So you want to try and set your pitching staff up as best as possible, and right now, they've got 3 guys you probably trust in a wild card or winner take all situation. Yep. In Berríos, in Robbie Ray, and Alek Manoah. I think those are 3, and it's crazy we've gotten to this point and Hyunjin Ryu is not on that list.
The fact that Ryu was not one of the 3 guys that you mentioned shows you how far things have come here.
Probably be number 4 on the list. I mean, Steven Matz has been better in the second half of the season. You know, than he was in the first half of the year. But, you know, if I was to pick guys to play in a game 162, 163, and a wild card game, those are probably the 3 guys I'm going with, depending on the importance, of course, of game 162. You might get there and it might not mean as much, you know, as it's kind of expecting to mean right now. But the Jays go into a weekend series at home. They stay at home against the Minnesota Twins, then back on the road against Tampa, and then Minnesota on the road for a 4-game set.
Like, take a look at the way it goes. It goes like they're playing junk, then they're playing a really good team, junk, really good. That's the way it goes for the rest of the season.
Yeah, so it's, you know, 2 series against the Twins. You've got essentially home and home with the Rays and the Twins. You've just done the home side of the Rays series. Now you've got a home series on the weekend against Minnesota. No day off next week as you head into Tampa for 3, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Minnesota for 4 beginning Thursday. And then a day off the following Monday before a very crucial 3-game set that could mean a lot or could mean little. As we've kind of come to know here, it's certainly live and breathe by the day because lots can change in 24 hours.
No doubt.
In the Major League Baseball picture. Boston Red Sox in a 3-3 tie right now in Seattle, top of the 6th. And later on tonight at 5 o'clock, about an hour away from first pitch in Baltimore.
Come on,
the
Orioles!
Yankees take on the Orioles.
Yep. Jays still have an opportunity. I guess good news would be they still have an opportunity to kind of really take care of their own business against the Yankees with the few games they have remaining on the schedule there. They don't have any more at the Red Sox. Obviously, they're not chasing the Rays technically for a wild card spot. And then, yeah, they've got, 10 left with two of the worst teams in the American League. Seven with Minnesota, three with Baltimore to close
good
it
math,
out.
Pat.
So I'm
so proud of you, man.
One in ten, I'll get
you
it right.
You didn't even have to look at it. You just kind of did it right off the top of your head. I'm very proud of you.
If it's like, if you're working with single digits, I can usually get it done without too much.
Get to the double digits?
Or decimals. Whew. Decimals are trying to like do millions.
Well, I mean, decimals are tough in really any point. But yeah.
There's one guy who's bad at it, though. It's me. We're live in the Iconic studio on this Wednesday afternoon, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. So Wednesday afternoon.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is?
Thought I was wrong.
Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Julie. Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on. I know you can hear me. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo! Hump day!
Hey. Guess what day it is?
Hump day!
Hump day!
I've heard this in so long.
It's hump day!
Yeah. Hey, Mike!
Mike!
What day it is?
Hey, Cam,
guess what day it is?
It's not even Wednesday.
Let it go, Phil.
If you're a camel, you put up with this all the time. It's what you do.
This one's for Pat!
Well played, gentlemen. Well played. The Iconic studio powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Telecommunications, it's Iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. So, coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, we've got headlines for you.
That was quick.
Got
by the way,
some Flames
just
talk
quick,
for
quick
you.
Quick hat tip. That was quick, Logan. That was impressive.
Yeah, you nailed that logo. Well done. I literally thought.
I didn't know where he was going with that. I didn't catch what day you said it was. So I was like, I don't know if you said the wrong day. But that was well done.
I was quite sure I said the wrong day because that happens one out of four times when I get the day wrong. So I just thought the logo was like, it's Tuesday, you dummy. But no, it is Wednesday. I'm glad I got that right. On this Wednesday, we're about 2 hours away from Alberta Premier Jason Kenney addressing the province. So there will be new news, COVID-19 related news today.
Just 24 more deaths in the province today.
So we'll find out what is coming. 660 News, our sister station, will have full coverage of that, and we'll carry the news conference with Premier Kenney live if you want to tune in there. We'll give you the Coles notes, the notes that only these small brains can ingest and spit out at you. We'll bring them to you as well, but I'm not exactly sure what it's going to be. I'm not sure what it's going to mean, for instance, for preseason Calgary Flames games or Edmonton Oilers games. I really don't know. I don't know. It sounds like the newsies believe that there's going to be some sort of vaccine-related mandate that is going to come into effect. What that looks like, I don't know. That's at 6 o'clock, and we'll get the details for you because we're on the big show today with the late start until 7 o'clock. Up next, we will officially kick off the program with headlines. Logo's got the biggest stories of the day. We'll get to all of it. New sports that hire Cabbie is coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. And who's the number one prospect in the Flames organization? All coming your way as the big show kicks off for real next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Save up to $18,400 on selected executive-driven models. Visit Calgary's original Infinity destination, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
All right, welcome officially to Hour 1 of the Big Show. Hopefully you enjoyed the Jays and the Rays. More on that in just a second. Big Show goes until 7 o'clock this evening, so you've got an extra hour of Nault and Steinberg. And now Logo has the biggest stories of the day. Happy Wednesday, Logo.
Happy Wednesday, fellas. Let's start it off with those Toronto Blue Jays. You heard all the action right here on Sportsnet 960. In case you weren't right up on it right there at 1 o'clock for first pitch and you might have missed it, the Jays offense on fire early in the bottom of the first.
1-2. Bichette drives it. Deep left field. That ball's going to go. A free run homer for Bo Bichette. Take a trip around the bases, Bo. You've got your 25th of the year. And the Blue Jays strike for three here in the first.
So the Jays get out to an early 3-0 lead.
I just want to keep grooving on that.
Yeah, that was a good
Let's
one.
Let's go.
look, it's always good to get off to a good start, but you got to feel good. You get up to a 3-0 start, and tight pants Robbie Ray is on the mound.
The 1-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Robbie Ray blows away the side. You are watching one of the game's best at his craft here this season. Robbie Ray is phenomenal. 5 strikeouts. He strands the leadoff double at second base.
And then in the fourth inning,
the 2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He got him with a slider. Strikeout number 8 for Robbie Ray. And once again, he works around a leadoff double. And the Rays strand the runner at third base. Robbie Ray is firing the shutout through 4 innings on the hill.
And then in the 7th inning,
runner at first, the 1-2 pitch, swing and a miss. He struck him out. A baker's dozen for Robbie Ray. 13 strikeouts through 7 superb innings from Robbie Ray. The Blue Jays have a 6-1 lead, and in downtown Toronto, it's time to stretch.
Robbie Ray would give up a solo home run to Mike Zunino. That was all he gave up on the day. 13 strikeouts, 1 earned run, 0 walks on the day. Pat, they gave him enough offense. Bo Bichette had 5 RBIs on his own. But this guy is making a solid, solid case for that AL Cy Young. It is double-digit Ks every time this guy hits the mound.
Who is this guy? Like, this guy, and look.
It's the same guy they got from Arizona for nothing?
Yeah.
Like, with cash consideration?
Who are you? And what is happening right now? This is a guy, the fact that we can sit here and talk, and Will talked about it earlier this week, the fact that Will can use the term, this guy could be the Cy Young Award winner in the American League, and he plays for the Blue Jays, and it's not Nate Pearson, or it's not Ryu. Like, these are the guys that we talked about as a future ace, or the guy that we talked about as the current ace. But Will, Robbie Ray is the guy that is amongst the leaders in AL Cy Young conversation. It's bonkers when you think about it, and another Cy Young-worthy start tonight for Ray. Today.
He is one of only 2 guys in the American League with a sub-3 ERA, Gerrit Cole being the other. I should say sub-3 ERA with 200-plus strikeouts. That's a very important stat to add on top of that, because there are more than 2 with a sub-3 ERA, but they are the only 2 with also 200-plus strikeouts. He's a guy who essentially had no control in Arizona. Even last season, guys, I mean, only started the 1 game for Toronto, or 4 games, sorry, for Toronto, but the ERA was 4.79. So this season, completely out of the ordinary when it comes to what this guy's been previously in his big league career. And it's why I'm so fascinated about the offseason with Robbie Ray. I know we're focused on the now and what he's doing for this Jays team and the fact that he's very much in the Cy Young conversation and at this rate could win it. He's got a big payday coming, though, and what Robbie Ray are you paying for? That to me is the great caution. And I know Jays fans, Pat, you and I have talked about this. They would love to bring him back. I think there's probably some that say, this team's always starving for pitching. Pay him whatever he wants. But what are you paying for? That to me is the great caution here. And we've talked about it with Adnan Virk, and he was the first one who kind of brought that up. It's like, well, is Robbie Ray ever going to do this again? Or is this the best season of his career? And, hey, credit to him. He's going to get paid as a result. It's just, I don't know if I want it to be the Blue Jays that pay him.
It's a tough one because he turns 30 in a couple of weeks. And so he'll be 30 for all of next season, or the vast majority of next season. I think it's probably fair to say that this is a career season for Robbie Ray. Based on what he's done before, based on the way these things usually go, are we talking about now all of a sudden this guy just arriving and being in the AL Cy Young chat every year? Like, this guy's now Gerrit Cole? He might win the Cy Young over Gerrit Cole this year, but what Cole has done is proved that he is an elite pitcher year in, year out. And so that's the danger in signing Ray to a long-term extension. And if you're the Jays, Like, if I'm the Jays and you can get something done on a shorter-term deal for a 30-year-old pitcher and you might have to pay him a ton, then I'm interested in doing that. If what he's really looking for is a 5-year deal somewhere, then I'm a little more worried about the Jays, and you know, I'm a little bit more open to the either or conversation with Ray or Semien. Like, if I had to choose on long term deals, I'm probably leaning Marcus Semien over Robbie Ray on the two pending free agents for the Blue Jays. But I would still try to see if you can tempt a guy like that with big money on a shorter term deal. I'd be okay with that, knowing that he probably still has a few years left after this year of being a good pitcher. Maybe not a Cy Young quality pitcher, but a good pitcher.
And the big X factor, of course, is Pete Walker, right? I mean, he's a guy who's done pretty well in his time with the Blue Jays in terms of getting pitchers to a great spot. And if Pete Walker stays on staff, it's very clear that's a relationship that works. Maybe you're more comfortable with that payday.
Other thing that is important, a lot of people on the text line have brought up the name Pete Walker. And that's also a really big X factor.
That's literally what I just said.
Sorry, I was responding to something the boss needed me to do.
All
so
good.
I missed it. But yes, all the good. Text line has
that's what I said. If Pete Walker stays, then you're probably more comfortable with paying him.
So what I just did was...
You just pulled a pin here.
I wasn't going to say any names. I don't do that. I try not to do that, but I'm working on something else for the boss.
Hey, you've got lots going on. Logo.
Apologize for that.
All you, buddy.
Hey, and here is something that hasn't been mentioned. What about Pete Walker? Like, back to you, Logo.
So the Jays pick up a 6-3 victory. As for teams around them in that wild card race, Red Sox and Mariners right now, bottom of six. They are currently tied at 3. Pat, I believe this is where you chime in and say that the Red Sox and Mariners are tied at 3.
Have you mentioned that the Red Sox are playing the Mariners? Next time one of you two does that, I'm going to completely gloss over it, not even talk, and I just get kicked in the teeth.
Come about an hour away from Yankees and Orioles coming up a little bit later today. The A's are in Kansas City to take on the Royals. That one, a 6-10 first pitch. Well, we have some NHL news to get to, some on and off the ice news. We'll start with
The Red Sox and the
Did I mention the Red Sox in Seattle?
And then the New Year's Eve game this year is the 31st.
I nailed that one.
That's weird. Yeah.
I didn't forget about that. No. I didn't mishear that one.
No. So we'll move to hockey. We'll start with some front office news. The Arizona Coyotes have named former Toronto Maple Leafs GM John Ferguson Jr. as an assistant GM to Bill Armstrong. He was the Leafs GM from 03 to 08. Spent the last 7 years with the Boston Bruins in their hockey ops department. And former Sportsnet analyst Mike Fiuta off to Carolina. He is being hired by the Hurricanes as a senior consultant to Don Waddell. Probably going to help them figure out their next offer sheet revenge thing. I guess that's Carolina's big thing there. A bit of a surprising. I know Fiuta was talking for a long time about getting back into the game, but I think a few people will be surprised about John Ferguson Jr. back as an assistant GM in Arizona with Bill Armstrong.
Yeah, I think some on the surface are, Pat, but you dig deeper into it, and this guy's done a lot of good work in Boston. He's been part of their hockey operations for a while. I saw some people today on Twitter talking about the work that John Ferguson did with the Boston Bruins and player development. Maybe not in the spotlight because everyone focuses in on Don Sweeney and the others in that front office. You know, you never saw John Ferguson Jr. talking to media. You probably didn't even know he was on their staff, but you talked to people around Boston. You did some pretty good work there. And when you go from the biggest market in Toronto and, you know, you go out the way he did, you probably don't think that he's going to get another shot, but this is going to be interesting tandem, I think, in Arizona with Bill Armstrong. We've talked a lot about the work Bill Armstrong's done this offseason, and if he can repeat anything similar when it comes to player development in Arizona, I don't think it's a bad hire at all.
As for the other big management name that you mentioned there, Logo, in Mike Fiuta, he's a really interesting case. Like, he was unemployed for a little while, and I know that he was really grinding to try to get back in a front office, whether it be as an AGM, whether it be as a GM. There were loose rumors that, you know, he was connected in some form or another to the Flames, as he goes way back with Daryl Sutter, so there was thought that maybe he would join this hockey ops staff. Obviously, that didn't happen, but that had been out there from different people, kind of suggested in different spots. I know that our guest from yesterday, John Hovind, had suggested it before. Feud is really interesting. His track record for development, his track record for identifying prospects and identifying talent is quite strong, but he's never had that shot of being a general manager. It's never quite materialized for him, and he's been in those convos before, so I wonder if it does ever materialize for him, or if AGM or this type of role is what he sees himself in, or what the league sees him in for the next little while. Because, you know, sometimes that AGM, that highly touted AGM, moves on and becomes a pretty successful tenured general manager. I think of Brad here in Calgary, was an AGM for a long time. Well, he's been a GM now for 7 years. And Jim Nill was an AGM in Detroit for the longest time. He's been the general manager of the Dallas Stars for, you know, 7-8 years now. So sometimes they move on and there's a lot of success. Sometimes Paul Fenton, how long was he the GM in Minnesota for? After being a candidate for so long,
14 months.
Yeah, it was he barely lasted and it never worked. So some are able to do it, some aren't able to do it. I'm curious what the future holds for a guy like Fuda.
I have also a pair of news and notes.
Did
from
you
the,
mention Mike Fuda?
I have mentioned Mike Fuda. Yeah, thanks, okay. Pat. When's New Year's?
Trying to make sure the 31st.
31st. Gotcha. Thanks for that. Also, a couple news and notes from the Edmonton Oilers.
Pat, I'm Will.
It's true.
The names. Who is this idiot?
First off, for Edmonton, they have signed Colton Sevier to a pro tryout for training camp. 32-year-old Red Deer native with 5 goals and 10 points in 16 games with the Penguins last season. And a bit of disappointing news for forward prospect Dylan Holloway. He's going to be out at least 3 months after having a second surgery on his wrist. The 2020 first-round pick previously had surgery to repair a fracture in his wrist in March while he was playing at the University of Wisconsin. However, according to a statement from the team, during the recovery process, it was determined by Oilers medical staff and hand specialist that he required further surgery. He signed his entry-level deal with the Oilers in April and will rehab his surgery in Edmonton. Last season in the NCAA as a sophomore, he scored 11 goals and 35 points in 23 games. Always a tough one, Pat. Sevier, we'll see what he does at training camp, if he can find a spot on the Oilers roster, but I think Holloway, obviously the bigger news in all of this, obviously not having the issue fixed the first time while he was with Wisconsin, going to cost him 3 months.
Yeah, and, you know, that's unfortunate because in his first professional season, he won't get his first pro training camp, won't be able to go through that fully. But if you're the Oilers, like, you're not rushing this guy along. This guy's one of your top prospects going forward, Will. There's a lot of promise for this young man. I know the Oilers are kind of looking at him as the future center ice position. You know, it's not like McDavid's old or anything like that, but they're looking at him as kind of a guy that can start to move up and maybe supplant a guy like Nuge at some point. Like, there's a lot of hype put on and a lot of hope put on Holloway, and I think rightfully so. He's a very good prospect. He's a top 15 pick in the league. You don't need to rush this guy along. So just get it dealt with now. It's unfortunate he misses training camp, and it's unfortunate that a good chunk of his first professional season is going to be taken away. He'll be fine, and we're not even talking about a guy who's 20 years old yet. So get this taken care of, and make sure that you're going to have him at 100% for the next 5-10 years.
The one guy I think a lot of people in Edmonton are curious about is Tyler Benson. They were scared to lose him in the expansion draft, which kind of was puzzling because I don't know how big of a piece he was. Yep. When he hadn't played in the league, but okay. And he's, you know, competing with the likes of Devin Shore and Brendan Perlini for probably top 12 time or being a top 12 forward on that team. And I think a lot of people are talking about that. And now, you know, they don't play the same position, but the absence of Dylan Holloway, does that open the door a little bit for Tyler Benson? You do wonder. A guy that's taken some strides in the American League, was a point-per-game player in that league last year. If now, you know, if he's going to make the NHL, now's the time. And I think there's some people wondering about that as their rookie camp kicks off, and a lot of people talking about Tyler Benson in Edmonton.
So that's the news in the NHL. We'll shift to the NFL for a pair of stories on headlines today, guys. First of all, Odell Beckham Jr. not going to be in the lineup for the Browns this weekend when they take on the Houston Texans. He is still recovering from that torn ACL from last season. He experienced a setback and will keep practicing in a limited capacity. He suffered that injury going back to last October. And Will, mark this down. Urban Meyer has said, no chance. I am not leaving Jacksonville. I'm here and committed to build an organization, which I don't really get. They already have an organization. But there's no chance that he is going to USC after they fired Clay Helton on Monday. No chance. Don't mark it down. This is a promise. No chance. One of the most successful college football coaches of all time leaves Jacksonville to go to USC. Does anyone buy this, or are we just kind of saying this is what he's supposed to say?
I buy it. I mean, it's one game in his NFL career. Do I think he's going to last 10 years in Jacksonville and be a very successful NFL coach? No, I don't. I mean, give me the list of successful college coaches that have made it in the NFL, and it's a very short list with maybe a couple of names on it. I don't think Urban Meyer is long for the NFL, Pat, but do I think he leaves Jacksonville after two games? No, I don't. I think that he is truthful when he talked about what he talked about today. I don't think he's leaving tomorrow for USC. I think there's obviously going to be a link between the two, but I see, you know, the other name that came up this week for NFL coaching, you know, Eric Bieniemy, the offensive coordinator in Kansas City. I see that more than I see Urban Meyer leaving Jacksonville for a USC job two games in to his NFL tenure. I don't think it's going to work long term, and there's some murmurs about him already losing that room, but I don't know if I buy him jumping ship to go to USC this quickly.
Not yet. And that is, this reminds me a lot of a few of the more recent ones that
happened.
I thought
you were going to say Chip Kelly.
No, not so much Chip, actually. It reminds me a lot of, I mean, the one that immediately comes to mind is Saban. And there was a lot of
also
smoke
Florida
to that fire for the longest time. You're like, is Saban going to go to Alabama? No, I'm not going to Alabama. I'm here. I'm committed to the Miami Dolphins. And eventually, where did he end up? Well, as the most successful college coach in the history of the game, arguably. And look what he's done since taking over Alabama. The other guy that comes to mind is, does anybody remember the Bobby Petrino absolute farce that was his little bit of time in Atlanta? I think he coached like 12 games or something like that. And Bobby Petrino, same thing. There was a lot of smoke. There's a lot of smoke. I'm not going. I'm staying here. I'm committed to the Atlanta Falcons. He left midseason. So do I think Urban Meyer is going to leave Jacksonville a game into his tenure? No. However, I am not going to sit there and say that smoke coming from Jacksonville is fake smoke. It's one I'm going to keep an eye on over the next number of weeks and throughout the season. I'll say this. Here we are on September 15th. If in late August, Urban Meyer is coaching, late August of 2022, Urban Meyer is coaching at the University of Southern California or at another high-end college institute in the United States, I will not be surprised. I just don't think it's going to happen in the near future.
Last note on headlines today, guys. Cavalry FC announces new COVID-19 fan protocols that will begin on Wednesday, September 22nd, when the gates open for fans attending the Canadian Championship match against Pacific FC. They will require fans attending matches to verify full vaccination status, as well as agree to temperature checks prior to entering the venue. Masks encouraged while you're seating outside, but will be required indoors at the venue. All Cavalry FC players, staff, officials, contractors, stadium staff, and event staff will be required to follow the same requirements and guidelines. If you are unable for personal or medical reasons to get vaccinated, you will need to prove a valid negative test 48 hours before kickoff. That, headlines.
Big Show headlines brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. With lease or finance rates as low as 0% on 2021 Q50s. From Calgary's original Infinity destination, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Just wanted to bring something up as we were talking about a little earlier. Like, has anybody thought about Pete Walker? If Pete Walker isn't with the Blue Jays next year, what does that mean for Robbie Ray? If you weren't listening about 10, 15 minutes ago, you wouldn't understand why that's funny. But if you were, then you can understand why it's self-deprecating.
But I think that
right
is
now.
Bunk, and I think that is such chicken bleep.
Watch your mouth, bud. Hey, watch your mouth. And I didn't
have yourself a great rest of your Thursday night slash Sunday morning.
Sorry, what?
Was that at the end of overtime?
Must
that had
have been.
To been
have there, yourself a great rest of your Thursday night slash Sunday morning.
Yeah. That had to be okay. Like at like 12:31 in the morning after a long
Sorry,
day.
What?
It's a complete and utter
Flames
idiot.
Game day from the Jobbing.com arena in Glendale, favorite. Arizona.
The only reason that's funny is because it was like 5 years after the fact, Jobbing.com arena didn't exist anymore. It was after they named it Gila River Arena, still called it Jobbing.
And I think that the packages are going to be big.
Yep.
Save a horse, ride a Lubo.
Well, that one got a flag from Lou. It sure did.
They haven't even sniffed it.
That those packages will be big.
Flames celebrating a pretty big anniversary this season. I'll be honest, it totally snuck up on me.
Which one? What a cliffhanger.
That was. I don't even know what I was.
All right, if you. Well, holy.
All right, let's take a break. Flames prospect camp officially underway as they did fitness testing today. So here's our next topic around the corner. Get your thinking cap on the text line. Who is the top prospect in the Flames organization for you? How would you round out the top three? All that next. Big Show rolls on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Wednesday edition of the Big Show rolls on. We started late today. Blue Jays with a 6-1 win over the Rays earlier today. Jays take 2 of 3 from Tampa. They'll go into a day off and 6-3 the final score. Sorry, not 6-1. And they go into a day off. They'll take on the Minnesota Twins starting this Friday for a weekend set at Rogers Center. Friday, we will have coverage of the opener of that game starting at 6 o'clock. Joined in progress will be live on location at the Wild Rose Tap Room on Friday. So 2 of 3 for the Jays against the Rays. They continue to stake their claim for the number one or number two wild card spot in the American League. By the way, to the bottom of the 7th we go in Seattle Mariners, Red Sox. Tied 3-3, keeping our eye on that one as well. Flames training camp officially underway. Phase one of Flames training camp officially underway. That would be prospects camp. Today, the prospects met up for their fitness testing. They'll hit the ice for the first time at the Scotiabank Saddledome tomorrow at 1 o'clock. They'll do 2 skates tomorrow, Friday, before heading to Edmonton Saturday for a prospects game you'll hear right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. 5 o'clock, Oilers Flames from Rogers Place. They're back at it Sunday, and then another prospects game, 6 o'clock at the Scotiabank Saddledome on Monday evening. I don't believe that that one is going to be open to fans at this point, but as we move closer towards the preseason, more on all of that is going to be figured out, and we'll learn a little bit more about where we are as a province coming up in about 90 minutes when Premier Kenny speaks to Albertans at 6 o'clock. That news conference will be carried live on 660 News.
Probably be 30 minutes late to the podium.
629, so something like that.
Not get too excited.
They're announcing it at 6 o'clock. How's that? So with Flames prospect camp officially underway, who is the number one prospect in the Flames organization? I asked that to the text line at 960-960, and I throw it out to our quorum, our three-man panel here on the Big Show. Who is the number one prospect in the Flames organization? Logo, if you were to be asked that question right now, knowing what has happened since the 2021 NHL draft, who do you point to as this team's number one prospect?
For me, it's Connor Zary. I think that the numbers that he put up in junior, I think that it translates well to an NHL level as well. The fact that he was able to get some time with the Stockton Heat last year was, I think, a huge benefit. He showed extremely well in those 9 games, being able to put up 7 points in a jump to pro hockey like that against grown men, to me, solidified Connor as this team's top prospect. He's at a premium position at center ice, which I don't think you can devalue. It's a very important one, especially, frankly, in an organization that's had a hard time developing top-tier centers. Perhaps this is a guy that down the road could be a top-six option for them. After a successful run with Stockton, he went to Kamloops, played a shortened season, wore a C on his jersey, which, again, I put a lot of value in, 24 points in 15 games there, and with Canada at the World Junior Championship. So, For me, it's Connor Zary. I just think position-wise, to me, really the thing that solidified it, guys, was that run with Stockton in 9 games where we didn't even really know what was going to happen for most of these guys. And then all of a sudden, it's, hey, Connor, yeah, you can stick around. By the way, your eligibility won't be messed up for junior. You can go play in the AHL. If he had put up no points or struggled with that, I wouldn't have been surprised in the least. The kid's 19 years old, and he went out and showed great in that. So for me, thanks to that run in Stockton, it's Connor Zary.
It really, I mean, it's boring radio. It's really hard for me to go in a different direction. I guess the only thing I would say is what do you classify as prospect? You know, do you go by age? Do you go by games played? Because really for me,
like we'll disqualify Valimaki.
Would be the only guy that I would put in the same category. For me, if you had Valimaki still as a quote-unquote prospect.
How's this? Anybody on a one-way contract will disqualify. So that also disqualifies young Mr. Mackey. Even though I think that you could probably make an argument that they are, we'll say anyone on a one-way contract doesn't.
Well,
just arbitrarily right now.
So for that, for me, it's Connor Zary. For a lot of the same reasons Logan mentioned, I think the position is one that you put him slightly over Pelletier. The fact he's played pro hockey already, albeit a very, very small sample in 9 games, in a weird division, not a typical American Hockey League schedule, all that factored in. You know, that's probably a guy that I would have at the top of my list. And I think, again, Valimaki would be in the conversation, but if you're not going to qualify him because of, you know, the games he's played, obviously already making 7 figures. It's probably hard to include him on that list. So for me, it's Connor Zary, and the primary reason would be the sample size at pro hockey last season. The numbers, you know, were fantastic in Kamloops after that. And, you know, again, the fact that he plays center as opposed to wing, you've got him as a slight nod over Jacob Pelletier.
So my number one prospect, and I do this, the main reason I go away from Zary, so we did this over at flamesnation.ca, and all the contributors there kind of gave their lists, and Zary was number 2 on my list. Number 1 on my list is the most recent first-round pick, and that's Matt Coronato. And the reason why I go with him is because of ceiling. And, like, I have no idea what Coronato is as a pro, and we won't know that for at least another year because he's going back to Harvard.
We don't know what Zary is as a pro.
We don't, but at least we've seen him play 9 games.
Again, though, it's 9 games.
It is.
It's not like we've seen him for 80 games.
For sure. There's still lots of questions as to what he's going to be, and this is going to be Zary's first full season as a pro. But Coronado's ceiling is bonkers to me. Like, this is the first time the Flames have had an offensive talent quite like this in the system since they drafted Tkachuk. Like, Tkachuk's junior numbers when he was taken 6th overall were pretty crazy coming off that season where they won the Memorial Cup in London. That's the last time they had a guy drafted that you're like, look at those numbers. And for that reason, like, Coronato had 48 goals in 51 games in a very good league. And I think as much as, you know, like, the USHL has turned into a really good league, and it is far more on the same level with the CHL now than it ever has been. And for a guy to score like that at a very good level, and I know he played on a powerhouse team, all that type of stuff, I just lean towards Coronato because of the ceiling and what he could be. I think he has the highest, like, the highest depth chart placement if he gets to his ceiling on the team. I go Zary 2, and then I have Jacob Pelletier as number 3 rounding it out. Like, are you on board, Will? Like, is that your top 3 as well, just different orders for him?
Yeah, I've got Zary, Coronato, and Pelletier. Okay. Those are my top 3. I agree with you on the ceiling, and probably is recency bias, the fact that I've seen him, and I think maybe if you were to look at, like, an ETA of pro hockey or playing in Calgary, I think Zary's is closer than Coronado, so that's why I would also have him higher. So that's the only reason why I've got the two difference there. But, you know, it's funny you bring up those numbers at the USHL. I was listening to John Cooper on a podcast who has coached at a lot of different levels, coached 2 seasons, and actually won a title with Green Bay in the USHL, and he talked about the fact that he's, you know, that's a league full of good players. And the one comment stuck out to me, and if you can score 30 goals in the USHL, you're good enough to make the NHL. It's just now it's your job to do something with it. And so obviously the ball is in Coronado's court now. He's got to take that and take it all to the next level, you know, improve on his skills at Harvard. But yeah, for me, the reason why I've got Zeri ahead of Coronado, because yep. I think Coronado's a heck of a prospect, is the fact that, you know, I factor in the ETA. And even though Coronado's a higher pick, a more recent pick, probably has a higher ceiling, I think Zeri plays in Calgary before Coronado does.
Is your top three the same logo, those three guys?
It is. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and the only reason that Coronado, for me, comes in second to Zeri is strictly based on the fact that I think translation from college or junior hockey scoring to pro hockey scoring is one of the biggest factors in whether a prospect is successful or not. We've seen so many guys, and I'm not saying Matt's not going to be one of those guys, but or is. We've seen so many guys that score at such high levels through junior and college and are never able to make that turn once it turns to pro hockey and they have to find a different role. I'm not saying Matt can't do it. I have all the faith that he can. The USHL is a very good league. But I've seen Zeri, even in a small sample size, at least show me some of it. It's better than zero. I've at least seen it for 9 games from him at 19 years old.
Going to be a really interesting year for Zeri, because both him and Pelche will turn pro. I mean, there's almost a... Unless it goes so poorly in the American League that the team decides to send him back to junior, and that happens... The last time I can remember an overager going back in this organization to his junior team after... Like, Michael Ferland did it, going way back, I want to say, like, to 2012 or something like that. Ferland started in Abbotsford. It just wasn't working there, and so they sent him back to junior. I think that was when he went to Saskatoon. He'd been traded to Saskatoon while he was in the AHL, and he came back and played for the Blades. But most of the time, if you're unfamiliar, most of the time, a first-round pick does not play his overage season in the Canadian Hockey League. So even knowing how weird
things... And Ferland wasn't a first-round pick.
No, he was a fifth-round pick, so which is also important. Okay, so then we're
and
all
And by
kind
the way,
of,
the other thing, too, is Coronado will not play center in the NHL.
No, he's a natural winger, for sure. If you were to go... So I think that's probably your top tier of prospects in the organization, too, those three guys. So who would be your four? If you were to say, okay, if in some order, Zeri, Coronado, Pelche are your top three, and that's kind of your top tier group, who would be your four? I can go first if you want.
This is where my question of what defines a prospect comes into to factor again, because the guy that I would have four is probably going to be in the NHL this year, and that's Vladar.
And that's who my four is.
Yeah.
But it counts, and I didn't even know that. I didn't even think about this when I made my not on one-way contracts rule, but he qualifies.
Well, he's on a two-way today this year.
He's on a two-way both years, I believe.
No,
two-way, one-way. Right. Yeah. So this year
he's
on a two-way.
Technically, your rule still counts, my friend.
So I'll say Vladar.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about what this guy could be. And yeah, you're right. He's probably going to be in the NHL this year. But everything that you hear, I know that when he was acquired, you heard the same things. Everybody seems like they believe this guy has got a really, really high ceiling between the pipes, knowing how hard that is to project.
Yeah, and people look at the NHL numbers and go, wait a second, you know, below 900, that's not very good. But I think it's lost that the final game of his NHL tenure last year in Boston, he was lit up for 8 by the Capitals.
Yeah.
That dramatically changed what his final numbers were, because in the 4 previous starts, he was very, very good. There's a lot to like about his game. The Flames have had success with Czech Republic goalies in their past, or at least certainly recently. So, yeah, I think it's a big year for Dan Vladar. And you know, for me, and again, it goes back to the Zeri Coronado thing for me, because the next two guys on my list are goalies, and the one guy is quicker to the NHL. It's going to be this year, and Dustin Wolf's probably a handful of years, you know, at least 3.
Yep.
Away from being in the NHL. So for that reason, I've got Vladar ahead of Dustin Wolf.
Logs, who would be your four?
Yeah, it's not, like Will said, it's not entertaining radio, but it's Vladar. I think that I mentioned this to Lou on Hockey Central. If Vladar was a guy in the Flames organization for the entire time since he was drafted in 2015, it's a guy that I think guys would have more confidence in and have less questions about. He started his AHL career back in 2016-17. He's been seasoned through there, playing pro hockey for a number of years there. He spent time, you know, playing for his country in the Czech Republic in a few international tournaments, but his development path is one that has you excited that he's ready to take that next step. And we started to see it last year, and I think it just became a case where Boston probably didn't want to give him up, but realized with Allmark, Swayman, and maybe Tuukka Rask down the road, if he's healthy, you don't want to lose one of those guys for nothing. So to get a third-round pick back in exchange for the Flames, it probably the more palatable decision if you're the Bruins. I think all the talk about him, and look, another, funny enough, a USHL connection there with Coronado as he played for the Chicago Steel in 2015-16 himself. But I think his development path is one that you'd be very happy with if you were more familiar with the guy in your own organization. And the fact is, I think that when you pay that sort of price, you're expecting him to be the number two in Calgary this year. So it was hard to go anywhere else for the four.
Well, and Vladar is not even going to be at this prospect camp. Neither is Coronado. And for those wondering, Coronado's not there because he is starting school. He's at Harvard, so he is unable to come.
Okay, smarty pants.
I went to I didn't go to Harvard, so I tip my hat to anybody who's willing to not only do sports but also work on all of what goes into being in an Ivy League school. I tip my hat. So the prospect camp officially starts tomorrow on the ice at 1 o'clock at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. We will not be there tomorrow because Will and I on location at Prentice Greens Golf and Country Club for the 27th Calgary Flames Alumni Masters Golf Tournament, raising funds once again for cerebral palsy kids and families here in Calgary. Since 1994, tournament has raised over $2.7 million for Calgary charities, and since 2011, over 1,800 kids living with a physical disability were able to know the simple joy of riding a bike through CP Kids and Families. If you would like to get involved, if you're not able to come out, if you're not able to be a part of the tournament tomorrow, you can get involved in the online auction and donate at calgarycp.org. Once again, calgarycp.org. All the auction items you can bid on there if you'd like to help out the Flames alumni and, more importantly, help out CP Kids and Families. And all the details, again, at calgarycp.org. Sportsnet made a big-time ad yesterday. Cabbie Cabral Richards is in the fold, joining us next to let us know what he's doing at Sportsnet. That's when we come back on The Big Show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
Text comes in at 960-960. We were talking last segment who the number one prospect is in the Calgary Flames organization. Two votes for Connor Zary, one for Matthew Coronado. For me, it's Mark Jankowski. No, it doesn't count. Doesn't count. On a PTO with another team.
Was Mike texting in now?
We haven't heard from Mike, hey? Ever since...
Mike.
Guess what day it is? Yeah, we haven't heard from Mike since the whole situation where he was going back and forth with Will about Mark Jankowski and his future in the NHL. Okay, so yesterday, pretty cool release coming down from Sportsnet. We know that single game betting is now legal in this country, and it is now law in this country that single game betting is good to go. And so Sportsnet, with a pretty big hire. The brand new executive producer of sports betting content is the one and only Cabral Richards, better known as Cabbie.
What a fancy title.
It's a pretty good title, Cabbie. Joins us on the show right now.
It's a great title. How are you, fellas?
Doing well, man. How about you?
Wonderful. Listen, I just came from the Jays game. A nice 6-3 win over a division rival. Listen, the place wasn't rocking because they only allowed 15,000 people in there who are on the spectrum of vaccination. I don't know if anybody really, anyway, we don't really need to get into that, but it was a great vibe. Like, it was a great win, and the enthusiasm in Toronto for the Jays, I'm not sure how much you guys are following, being, you know, a few provinces over.
Oh, but we're dialed in out here. Like, the Jays
you're dialed
huge
in. Okay, wonderful.
Here.
Okay, sick.
Jays are huge out here.
You sound like you lost your voice a little, Cabbie.
listen, I shouldn't be cheering in the press box. I know, like, we in the media, we know that. We understand that that's an, I think that's actually a written rule. I was going to say an unwritten rule as we're speaking about baseball, when baseball's, you know, large swath of unwritten rules. But I was cheering a little bit. Robbie Ray was just, it was awesome to see him work in person. And his pants, really tight. Like, you can see all the creases, my dude.
Yeah, how many guys take those pants off at the end of the game? Four or five?
I think they got to cut them off. It's probably like two of the clubhouse guys. Like, he just lays down and they each just take one leg and they just run one of those giant, like, 1957, almost like Brutus the Barber Beefcake. I know this is such a dated reference. Remember when he had like those yeah. Garden shears?
Yeah.
Or, no, they weren't garden shears. What were they called?
They were the I know what you're talking about. I don't know what they were
like
called.
Those giant head trimmers, but they were like enormous.
Head trimmers, yes.
Those. I feel like the two fellas in there, shout out to Moose, and I think Ryan's the other guy. I think they cut him out of his pants after big wins.
That's quite the visual. Cabby's with us. And you you are okay, how long have you been back north of the border for? Because you were you set up shop in Vegas for a little while. You were down there with Bleacher Report. How long have you been back in this country for?
I've been here for 2 days.
Oh, wow. You just got back. Nice. So this is...
Yeah,
this
I'm is fresh, nice. Bro. I'm fresh. Yeah, so like being... You know, when people ask me about Vegas, which is a wonderful city to live in, I didn't really soak in the Vegas experience because I was there for 7 months and then the pandemic hit and then everything shut down. So it was only until like June or July where Vegas started to feel like Vegas again. People were going to pool parties. I went to a pool party and I said to myself at one point drinking a vodka cran, I'm like, it will be a minor miracle if I don't get COVID today. And I'm double vaxxed, but I still felt like there's 4,000 people at Encore Beach Club. And we're, you know, the chain smokers are doing their thing and there's a great vibe and people are like dancing and everybody is just lit. And I'm like, I'm walking around and I'm like, there's no way I don't leave here without a positive test result. But I didn't. I was lucky. It was like I hit L1 on the PlayStation PlayStation 5 controller and just juked my way out of it. A little spin move and boom.
Little R, L1 circle.
Yeah, L1 circle. Thank you.
I know you got another radio hit coming up here at the top of the hour, but tell us, you would know better than us, but like, we know single game betting is now law in this country. We know how it is going to take over the sporting industry in this country. You're going to know better though. Tell us about what the executive producer of sports betting content means at Sportsnet, Cabby.
Thank you so much for asking. And thank you guys for carving out some time to jump on your show. I'm actually going to be in Calgary more than Toronto. But anyway, that's an aside. So one of these days, I'm going to pop up in your guys' studio, 100%. And I'm going to be there for the whole time. Whether you want me on the mic or not, I'll just be like, be in the lobby, just waiting. Put me in, coach. Like, just get the lefty from the bullpen. So as the enthusiasm grows for single game betting, you know, a lot of us are just used to, and please forgive me, I don't know the name of the gaming commission in Alberta. What is it called again? What's the acronym?
What? So to say that again?
What's the acronym for the betting commission in Alberta?
Oh, AGLC, the Alberta,
AGLC.
Alberta Gaming and Liquor Corporation. Yeah.
Okay. Got you. Right. In Ontario, it's the OLG, Ontario. Yeah. So what does this position mean? And, you know, we're going to build content. I got to build a team and hire some great creators, a guru or two. I know that there are gurus out there in Canada and in the videos and the content we produce. You know, we're going to tap into our gurus every once in a while. But really, I think the focus is going to be on the novice and the casual bettor. Because there's a big community of those, like people who play fantasy sports, people that might gamble, you know, wager like $5 or $10 on a game. We don't need the guys betting, you know, $5,000, $10,000 on the Vikings or the Bears or whatnot. It's like the community is really in like people who are, you know, might wager a few dollars, but are looking for that big payday, looking for that jackpot. As you know, we all... Well, not all of us, but many of us try to lock in those 10-leg, 11, 12-leg parlays. You spend 20 and you try to win 2,000. So We're creating content for that audience. Hopefully the community will engage with what we're putting out there. And we definitely want to reflect back, you know, reflect the love that we get from them back to them. So I have a few ideas. I picked up a couple of things from Bleacher being in Las Vegas, and I want to bring that home. And hockey is a huge priority here, obviously, in the United States. It's the NFL and college football and NBA. But Canadians still love those sports as well. So it's going to be a mix of a bunch of different sports. Hockey will certainly get a focus, but we're going to mix in everything else too.
Are you putting, are you putting money on Robbie Ray to win the Cy Young?
You know what? I already have. But this was probably 6 or 7 starts ago, and I just sprinkled, homie. I didn't bring the bag, and then he September's been great, and August has been great. I think it was after, did he have 12? And it was really stupid to lock in a futures bet after a great performance. You really should wait for the player to have a not great performance, so then the line moves the other way, more beneficial to you. Odds get longer, bigger payday.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping. It would be amazing. We haven't had a Cy Young winner since the late, great Roy Halladay. So it would be awesome to have one, have somebody in a Blue Jays uniform win the Cy Young.
I know you got a skate. I know you got another radio hit, so we'll let you go say hello to the gang in Vancouver, Cabby. It's awesome to have you on board at Sportsnet, and we'll see you here in Calgary. I know you'll be here a lot.
See you in the lobby, man.
And we'll see you in the lobby soon.
Look for me, fellas. Hopefully my pass from the Rogers building works out there, but if it doesn't,
we'll
please let me up.
We'll let you in. It's all good.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much, fellas. I really appreciate the time.
Thanks, Cabby. Cabby Cabral Richards is the brand new Sportsnet executive producer of sports betting content. You will see him all over the Sportsnet channels online. And I am really like,
like sports betting.
I do quite a bit. It's going to blow up. Like, you see what is happening south of the border. You see what is happening with the Bally Sports Network south of the border. VSiN is blowing. Like, it is going to explode in this country. And for us to be on board and to have a guy who has been doing it in the States with BR Bleacher Report, it's a big hire. He's got, I believe he married his partner, married a gal here from Calgary. So that's why he's going to be here quite a bit. So cool to have Cabby on board at Sportsnet. He joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Come watch the football game and enjoy their game day specials, open for dine-in. And as always, take out Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast.
Coming up next, speaking of betting, you might have some money on the line in your fantasy football league. Did you have some success in week one? Did you have some failures in week one? We'll get you caught up with the latest and answer some of your questions. You got a lineup question. You pick somebody up on waivers. Of course, the biggest debate is who do I flex in my lineup? Fantasy football conversation and some Ask Andy. Our boy Andy McNamara joins us in about 90 seconds. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The fastest hour of radio in Calgary. This is the Sports Drive at 5 on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Kicking off the Sports Drive at 5 today with our man Andy McNamara on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Welcome back to the program. My name is Will Nault. Just before the break, I said it. If you need help after week one, did you win? Did you lose? I think all eyes are on the flex position, as most of the time, until bye weeks are here, your receivers, your running backs are locked in. The flex positions where you got some questions. If you've got lineup questions for Andy McNamara, ask Andy in a few minutes, as you can get us at the text line 960-960. A few came in the break, and as they come in, we'll get to as many as we can before we say goodbye to our next guest who joins us right now. Andy, how are you, pal?
Oh, Will, doing good, my man. How are you?
I'm good. A few things to get to, and then, of course, the primary focus of these hits is always the listener input. We'll get to ask Andy here in a second. But first off, your thoughts, your latest on Twitter, and, of course, with Sportsnet, every week you do the Fantasy Minute. You had the biggest surprise and the most and best surprises from week one in fantasy football. Give our listeners who maybe haven't seen it your breakdown on what you saw from an opening weekend in the NFL.
Well, I think when we look at one of the biggest surprises, and now I'll say this, it wasn't a surprise to me, because I've said on this program, Will, and on many others, including the fantasy show, Jalen Hurts is the real deal, and people got to get on board and draft him. I made sure in both of my fantasy leagues that I had Jalen Hurts on as my my second quarterback, and I thought it was going to pay off, and it did. QB-wise, I'm just looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, sixth best, and just missed out on number on the five spot behind Tom Brady for week one. And here's the numbers we got to look at, because anybody can have a big week, right? What I look at is this, from a guy who I believed had underrated and underappreciated arm talent, who can use his legs to create plays and fantasy points. Jalen Hurts, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. That is vital. Also, 62 rushing yards. Okay, so now we're combining both of those, and that worked out to 28.76 fantasy points in Yahoo leagues. Fluctuation depending on your league, of course. But that is crucial to me when I see, I'm like, okay, Atlanta's not a great team. Yeah, I understand that. But you look at this quarterback where there are a lot of questions on. So I think Jalen Hurts, who's still available in about 20% of Yahoo leagues, by the way, folks, if you can get him on as a second, like, please do. I think that's going to be tremendous value. Obviously, the biggest surprise, Eli Mitchell of the 49ers. Well, like, okay, Kyle Shanahan, thanks for being a jerk and not telling us that Trey Sermon was doing apparently terrible in training camp. Thanks for keeping that little nugget to yourself. Benching him, people, the draft capital spent in Trey Sermon was just wild. And then he's benched, and Raheem Mostert gets injured like on the second play, season-ending knee surgery. So now we're thinking, okay, when is Trey Sermon going to get in? Jermichael Hasty is just sort of the change of pace. And Eli Mitchell, who's a sixth-round rookie, comes in and lights the world on fire to the tune of 104 rushing yards and a touchdown. Like, that's what really stood out to me probably as the biggest surprise. And Eli Mitchell, to no surprise to anybody after that showing, was the top waiver wire ad in all of fantasy football. And, Will, on some of the fab dollars, like people who had $100 budgets for the year, I was getting tweets in that people were spending $75 to all of their fab dollars on Eli Mitchell.
Yeah, the guy in my league spent $63 on him. It was by far and away the number one waiver ad of the week. I believe his own percentage in Yahoo went up by like 76%. It was legit ridiculous, and I think it would be at the top of the list for surprises from week one. The other side of it, and this is the big, you know, don't overreact to what you see in week one. If you're an owner of anybody in that Green Bay Packer offense, you're a little bit worried. Ooh. But what's your thought on the potential bounce back in week two against a lowly opponent like Detroit?
Yeah, like this, I don't know if they just thought that they were going to walk in and just, you know, push the button and get the season going. But this happened last year. Remember, was it against Tampa Bay, I think, where
I was
going to
say, if you look at the history, Rodgers, for whatever reason, Aaron Rodgers in Florida is not a good mix.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah, for whatever reason. Now you play Detroit, division game. I just feel, if you look back at the history under Aaron Rodgers, that this is going to be a statement smash game. They're embarrassed. They're taking to school. 3 points. 3 points against the New Orleans Saints, and Jameis Winston lit you up? Oof, that's another big surprise. Jameis Winston, 5 TDs, 0 picks. How about a little famous Jameis there? I believe this is a case where I have Aaron Jones in one of my leagues. I think it's going to be a big game for everybody. I think it's going to be a big game for Jones, Davante Adams, and Rodgers, and maybe little Robert Funyan Tunyon sprinkled in as well. This has just smash comeback written all over it on Monday Night Football.
All right, he's Andy McNamara. Of course, the primary portion of this segment is always, or the biggest chunk, I should say, the majority of this segment is you, the listener, you, the fantasy football player. You need some help as you head into week two, which begins tomorrow with the Giants and the Washington football team. Logo, it's time for Ask Andy.
You've got fantasy questions. He has fantasy answers. Helping you week by week in the leagues you love. It's time for Ask Andy on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Lots have come in already. If you've got a question for Andy, get the 960-960. Your texting fingers ready. If you don't get your question asked on the air today, fear not. Use hashtag Ask Andy. Tweet at Andy on Twitter, at AndyMC81. He will get at you at some point here before Sunday. Okay, Andy, let's dive in. I'm sure This name is going to come up a lot, so you may as well start here. Of course, I said that the flex positions where a lot of focus is as we get in the lineup questions. But, hey, Andy, who do I start at flex? Chase Claypool, Marquez Callaway, Michael Pittman, or Eli Mitchell?
Eli Mitchell all day long. I don't think there's any shadow of a doubt. Everybody else, the receiving side, I still don't know how the Buffalo Bills lost that game to Pittsburgh, by the way. I don't know. I'm not
that
sure
might,
that
might also be on your surprise list from week one.
That might also be. Ben Roethlisberger's arm looks horrendous. Horrendous. Much to my glee as well. But Eli Mitchell, look, here's what we got to realize. Eli Mitchell balled out. He has earned the opportunity to get the start for week two. I don't know why they wouldn't. However, we also have to remember, which is why I hesitated on spending too much of my fab dollars and missed out on Eli Mitchell. Maybe that'll be a mistake. 49ers, it's a noted committee all the time. Now, that doesn't mean that multiple backs cannot produce. But is Trey Sermon going to make his debut? Was sitting out last week just a message statement to Kyle Shanahan? We got to follow the draft capital. Eli Mitchell, sixth-round pick. Trey Sermon, higher draft pick. Well, you're going to want to get some value out of that. How does that work in to Michael Hasty as well? You got to figure that out. But out of those mixtures, I think you really look at Eli Mitchell and see what the follow-up does. I think you have to play him.
Speaking of Trey Sermon, he is involved in our next question. Again, 960-960 is where you can get in on Ask Andy. Hey, Andy, what do you think I should do with Zach Moss? Is he an easy drop? Ooh. Do I hold on to see if he gets into the lineup or traded? Someone dropped Sermon. Is he a better hold, or would you hold neither and move on to somebody else?
Interesting. So essentially, like, possibly drop Zach Moss and pick up Trey Sermon?
Yeah.
I would do that. I have no confidence in Zach Moss or that Buffalo Bills running game. I don't. I still think the Bills are going to win the division and have a great run. I just don't like the running back. I don't like how they're used. They're thrown out of whack last week. And the top rusher on that team, the most reliable one, is still Josh Allen. If we're looking at those two specifically, I like the hold of Trey Sermon. Again, you got to look at the draft capital, folks. Like, unless the guy is just a total, and we didn't even know why he was sitting, really, just that he didn't have a great camp, apparently. But he's going to get an opportunity. Zach Moss, what are we looking at in Buffalo? Yeah, just a guy. Trey Sermon has a chance to be something special. And maybe it doesn't work out. But out of the two, I would much rather drop Moss, get Sermon, hold Sermon for a while just to see how things develop in San Francisco, because I still think that tide can change.
A lot of questions about him, so we may as well move there now. Andy, just general thoughts, and I guess maybe where do you see him? And that's Will Fuller off suspension from week one.
I'll tell you what, Will. I've never been a fantasy football fan of Will Fuller. And the reason is because if you just look at the blank numbers or the total number at the end of the year, you say, wow, that was a great year or a good year or okay. But you have to look week to week. Will Fuller will get you 200 yards one week and then do nothing for three. So if you are comfortable holding on for those few big games and then having absolute duds, that's not how I like to play fantasy. If you do, that's fine. Overall, it might mix out. I'd prefer to have somebody a little bit more reliable week in, week out, like let's say a Jalen Waddle. I just don't trust that Tua's arm and the way that offense is built with Jalen Waddle in and him having a successful week is going to match up to what Will Fuller can do. I think he's going to do what he's done for his whole career. Well, I think he's going to have some amazing games and he's going to go silent for stretches as well. That's what it's been with a quarterback, by the way, that is lesser than what Deshaun Watson was. So I wouldn't get too excited over Will Fuller.
All right, let's try and hit a lot of these as we have got about a couple minutes left, and we'll try to get to as many of these as we can. Fuller, Parker, or Waddle? So it goes back to that Miami situation. I guess, how do you rank the Dolphin receivers?
Waddle, Parker, then Fuller.
Flex spot, Noah Fant, Laviska Shenault Jr., Nelson Aguilar, and another surprise from week one, Mark Ingram.
Oh, I'm not biting on Ingram, man. I don't care what the Texans did. Well, I don't care. I don't care.
I'm with you.
Four guys. No way. Don't get sucked in. Don't bite, people. Don't bite. Because I would be shocked if there's a repeat next week. David Johnson, Philip Lindsay, Rex Burkhead, Mark Ingram. You can go a different guy every week or just a schmoz in between. I'm not taking the bait. No, thank you. Not going to do it.
So where do you go? So, Aguilar, Chenault Jr., or Noah Fant?
I really like Chenault Jr. He had second most targets with my guy, Marvin Jones. And I still feel the offense is going to open up a bit to him as well. Jaguars are not a very good football team. They had to throw it 51 times last week. So I think they're going to be going to the air quite often this year, whether they like it or not. So I think you go with Chenault, who gives you, I think, that sort of comfortable floor in the low double digits with a chance to spike.
Jamal Williams or Josh Jacobs at flex?
I was surprised by Jamal Williams' usage. And then I was also surprised when I saw that usage that DeAndre Swift had also such a good week. So when I think Jamal Williams might turn out to be a little more useful than we were thinking. Now, Josh Jacobs is, he has a toe ankle injury and he was sidelined today. So that's something you want to track. I thought he did great. If he's healthy, I go with Josh Jacobs. If not, you can still feel pretty good about Jamal Williams.
Two flex spots on my roster, so please pick two, or I guess just rank them. Andy, Melvin Gordon, DJ Moore, DJ Shark, Brandon Cooks, and T. Higgins.
I would go with the two DJs.
Two receivers out of the three. Devonta Smith, T. Higgins, DJ Shark.
I like DJ Shark. I do. I just feel that there's that connection there in Jacksonville. Like I said, there's a lot of ball to go around. There was a lot. So I think I lean Shark there.
What about Smith or Higgins? You got two of the three there.
Oh, I got to pick two out of three. Okay. You know what? I love the upside of Higgins. I think I'll go with Higgins. I just they're throwing the ball a lot too, and that's what the offense is built around. So go with T.
Now, I think probably the list is maybe one when you look at quarterbacks that threw for five touchdowns and less than 150 yards. But Andy, do you expect – this is a quarterback question, so I guess you're looking for the bounce back of Ryan Tannehill or more yardage from Jameis Winston. Tannehill or Winston at quarterback?
You know what's funny? I had this exact same scenario on my team on what to do, and I dropped Ryan Tannehill for Jameis Winston. I was a bit bold. I don't know if that's a little too brazen at this start of the year. Maybe I'm biting a little too hard, Will. Maybe I'm biting a bit. I didn't like what I saw. I still think the Titans are going to be just fine. But what I saw of Jameis Winston was maturity. I saw vision. I saw someone who afterwards, and he was talking, really, I believe, drank in the wisdom of Drew Brees. So I believe from the way that that offense is built out and from what we saw, at least I think you go with Jameis. This is risky. It is risky. But I took a little bit of a gamble, and I went with Jameis in this exact situation.
Gronk or Tonyan?
Oh, God, I think you go with Gronk. Now, listen, folks. Gronk went off for like 4 weeks last year too, and then fell away. I want to see this continue for a few weeks. I wouldn't be surprised if he fell off, but Tonyan is very touchdown dependent. And I just feel like that percentage from the few catches he had to touchdowns is going to come down. Gronk seems a little bit more useful at this stage. I still want to see it develop more and more consistently in the first month of the season. But as of now, got to go with Gronk.
Hey, Andy, who do I start at flex? Apparently a deep receiver core on this team. Adam Thielen or Sterling Shepard?
Oh, boy. Jeez. You go with the better quarterback talent, and that's Kirk Cousins with Adam Thielen.
Hey, guys, my receivers are Robert Woods, T. Higgins, Kenny Golladay, and Laviska Shenault Jr. Oof. Who do I start? Two of them.
Nice. That's pretty good. I think you go with Woods and Shepard. Listen, I don't know what you guys thought. I love seeing Matthew Stafford looked like the son of California is doing him some good. I think you go with those two.
Andy, who do you flex at defense? Washington, Denver, or Cleveland?
Ooh, boy. You know what? I think my Browns are I honestly love all of them. I think Washington and the Giants, they can get a little junky. I think the Texans come back down to earth after being a little too cute in that opener. I think you go with my Browns.
Higgins or Shepard at flex?
Until we see Kenny Golladay and Saquon Barkley step it up in that offense, I'm sticking with Sterling Shepard. I don't think he'll be the man by the end of the year, but he's the man right now. So I think you go with him.
Hey, Andy, I got Waller and Gronk both at tight end. Do I start one of them at flex over Scary Terry or CEH?
Over CEH, yes. Over Scary Terry, no. Waller, obviously a tight end. Like, my goodness, what a sensation. I would put Terry McLaurin, even with the cold, cool taste of a Heinicke, right? No more Fitzmagic. It's over. I think you go with Scary Terry there, because we saw last year with just so many different quarterbacks in Washington, McLaurin still produced. So I think you go that against a very bad New York defense.
All right, three more, then we got to run. Calvin Ridley, is he going to bounce back, or do I look for somebody else like a Deontay Johnson or Deebo Samuel?
Yeah. Or Deebo. If you get Deebo Samuel,
I think they have all three on their roster. They're wondering if they keep Calvin Ridley in, or do you roll with Johnson and Samuel?
I would go with Deebo. Ridley. I would go Deebo and Ridley. I think you keep Johnson on the side. I don't like that arm from Ben Roethlisberger at all. Ridley, I feel, is going to bounce back. Deebo Samuel was legit. So I'm not taking that away from that guy. Brandon Ayuk, I don't know if he had a target. I think you got to stick with Deebo for now.
Which Baltimore running back would you start, Williams or Murray?
Like, again, none. None. I don't want any of them because it's Lamar Jackson. However, you're making me pick. We'll go with Tyson Williams, fresher legs. I think he is a bit more dynamic than Latavius Murray, who we kind of know what we have. But honestly, folks, stay away from that backfield. Lamar Jackson's the running back. He's doing it himself.
He certainly looked like he had more legs for sure in that opening week. Now, Murray didn't really know much of the playbook, so we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, for pop and legs, I certainly liked what we saw from Williams. Okay, two more. Andy, PPR flex, Cortland Sutton or DJ Chark?
I kind of like Sutton with Judy going down. I think there's more opportunity there. I think you go with Cortland Sutton.
And Pitts or Fant at tight end?
Oh, boy. You know what? I'm not giving up on Kyle Pitts yet. Well, I'm not. I know it wasn't a great week for Atlanta, but I think Kyle Pitts. I'm going to stick with Kyle Pitts.
Good stuff, Andy. Again, if your question was not asked on the air, you can hit him up on Twitter. Use the hashtag AskAndy. His Twitter handle is @AndyMC81. You are the man. We'll talk to you next Wednesday. Enjoy week two, my friend.
Oh, you too, Will. We'll talk to you soon. See ya.
You bet. There he is, Andy McNamara, our guest on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Come watch the football game and enjoy our game day specials. Open for dine-in and, as always, takeout. Check him out at 6060 Memorial Drive. In the Northeast. Is the time now in Edmonton? We'll ask that question with the Oilers next. We continue on the Sports Drive at 5, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Revving up for more, Sports Drive at 5 is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Quick update on the Major League Baseball scoreboard for Jays fans. Red Sox lead the Mariners 4-3, top 10 in Seattle right now. Red Sox have the bases loaded, too, with no out in the top of the 10th inning. So 4-3 Red Sox, they now have the lead in Seattle. Yankees, Orioles, scoreless, bottom two. Of course, Boston and New York, the two teams that Toronto is trying to keep behind them in the wild card race in the American League. Welcome back to the program alongside Logo and Will. My name is Pat. Great stuff.
Hi, Pat.
As always from Andy McNamara. Sup, Pat. AMC outstanding as always with his Ask Andy segment. We're going till 7 o'clock tonight, so stay with us here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's a question, and at risk of triggering Oilers fans, is Connor McDavid sick of losing? Is McDavid running out of patience in Edmonton? He has won one playoff round since joining the Oilers for the 15-16 season. Last year, they finished number two in the North Division and were swept very, very embarrassingly by the Winnipeg Jets in round one. And Connor was asked about his mindset earlier this week as he spoke to the media for the first time.
You've been a patient guy throughout this rebuilding process. Are you still in that headspace, or are you thinking, like, you know, the time is now here to get this thing rolling?
definitely thinking the time is now. I think I'm 24 years old. You know, Nursey and Dry are, you know, 25, 26 years old. Nuge, you know, 28. So, you know, the old excuse that, you know, we're young guys is no longer. So, you know, for us as a group, I think the time is now to start really pushing this thing. You know, Kenny's done his job and gone out and got pieces and added some things. And like I said, it's on us now to put the thing together.
What is your reaction to hearing that from Connor McDavid when he spoke to the Oilers media yesterday?
Well, I think my reaction is probably like a lot of people around the league, and the fact that, you know, we look at this Oilers team and you can talk about the rosters and ads all you want. He's not wrong. I mean, he's 24 years old. He's been in the league now for 7 years. It'll be a seventh season coming up. Leon Draisaitl has been in the league for just as long. And Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, you know, feels like it was a decade ago that he was drafted first overall. So this is a team that their core group is no longer 22, 21, 20. And they need to take that step forward. And as long as you've got two guys, Pat, that are consistently in top five in NHL scoring, the excuse of we're young and we're learning, that doesn't fly anymore, as Connor just talked about. And I think he's bang on. And this is not him saying that if we lose this year, I want out. I feel like that conversation is ridiculous. I don't think he wants out of Edmonton. But he's absolutely right. The time is now for this Oilers team to take that next step. The question becomes, are they the team that's ready to take that next step? How far can two guys take you? Because if you ask a lot of people objectively, there's some questions on this team about what they are. And I know I'm one of the people that has them in a playoff spot in the Pacific Division. But much like Calgary, except the opposite way, if they have a lot of ifs that don't go their way, they could be in a whole world of trouble. And then all of a sudden, you know, those questions become louder and louder to this team's captain.
I'm completely with you on the read of what McDavid is. I don't think McDavid is saying trade me now, or if we don't make the playoffs, or if we don't win a playoff round, I'm requesting a trade. No, I don't believe that narrative either. And I think it's an easy narrative. I think it's something that is fun to poke fun at the Oilers and sure, but I don't actually believe that that's what's going to happen. I believe McDavid wants to win with the team that drafted him. I think he wants to win with that group and would like to do it in an Oilers jersey. I really do believe that. So I'm with you 100% there. And what was really interesting, so he says now is the time. Okay, is now the time, though. And what I mean by that, you might want it to be the time, and you might be ready for it to be the time, but is the team ready to take that next step? I mean, look, they had a great regular season last year. Hell, the season that got shut down by the pandemic, they were having a really good year. They would have been one of the top four teams in the Western Conference and playing in the round robin as opposed to playing in the play-in round had they not lost their final game of the regular season the day that everything happened to the Winnipeg Jets. So they have been improving, and they have been turning into a better team for the regular season. But what has happened in the postseason? They lost in four to Chicago in the play-in round. Then they lost in four to the Winnipeg Jets.
Just to play devil's advocate, though, does that feel like a sweep to you? Like, they were close. I mean, realistically, that meltdown in what, game three? That doesn't happen. I don't think we're talking about the Oilers maybe even losing that round. I think that was a massive swing. And we talk about it all the time in this market with the Flames and the Ducks in 2017. I think it was very similar in a lot of ways for the Oilers last year. I think if they find a way to close that game out and don't go down 3-0, yeah, they might not win the series, but I don't think we're talking about a sweep either.
I mean, when I think about it, I'm like, it's funny. Do I think the Flames would have come back and beat the Ducks in 17? No, I don't. Do I think the Oilers could have against the Jets? Yeah, I can see that. But the point still remains. They are a team that has won one playoff round with him and haven't been able to get it done more recently in the postseason. And I look at their team and I ask myself, are they better than the team that lost game four to the Jets? And my answer actually is yes. I do think they're a better team. I think they are. much like the Blake Coleman signing here, I think the Zach Hyman signing is a really good one for the Oilers. And I think he will help them immediately. I think he will be a glove-like fit for the first 2, 3, 4 years of that contract. And if you're really looking honestly at what the Oilers are right now, Ken Holland does not care about, you know, years 5, 6, and 7 of Hyman's deal. You deal with that. They need to win now. To the point that we're talking about with Connor McDavid, they need to win now. So I do think that they are a significantly better team at forward because Hyman, I believe, will be a great fit in Edmonton. The reason why I'm not ready to sit here and say that they are a surefire, bona fide playoff team is that I don't know if they're better on the back with the moves that they've made. I know they brought in Keith and CeCe, but are they better? Are they better off on the blue line than they were last year? I would say it's a wash. And in net, they're exactly the same, my friend. And Mike Smith is coming off a year that is abnormal for a guy his age. You don't usually see guys post 920 plus save percentages as they approach the age of 40. And they did not make any changes in net. It's still Koskinen. It is still Smith and Stalock still there. They haven't changed. And can you expect Mike Smith to be a 920 goaltender again next year? If it happens, round of applause. Good on him. You continue to defy the odds. But I don't know if I'm a betting man if that's the way that I'm leaning going into next year. And that scares me.
You're not putting money on that?
I wouldn't be. And others might, but I wouldn't be.
And it's a 2-year contract, too, which is a little scary when you think about it.
Yeah.
And it's a 2-year contract at 2.2, not 1.5 or 1.25. I think the fact that essentially this team is running it back outside of the addition of Zach Hyman and Warren Fogle, who I do think is going to help their top
nine. I did not mention Fogle, and I'm with you. I think that's a nice addition, too.
But they got worse on defense. You can't sit here and tell me they're better on defense than they were last year. I know we can all sit here and laugh at the Klefbom for one-for-one deal for Taylor Hall, but Klefbom is a hell of a defenseman
Larson, sorry.
Yeah. He's a hell of a defenseman for them and had a great year last year, and they lost that piece.
Yep.
And
well, I totally forgot about Larson.
They don't have that shutdown piece in their top four. That puts even more pressure on Darnell Nurse, who, yes, had a great year last year, but puts more pressure on him. He doesn't have that, I don't want to call it a security blanket, but certainly doesn't have that other guy inside the top four who can lock down opponents and play really tough minutes. Are you asking Duncan Keith to play that? The biggest thing when the Oilers got Duncan Keith was people that were in favor of the deal, Pat, were saying, wow, he's not going to play the same tough minutes. Well, are you sure? Who's going to play over Duncan Keith? Klefbom ain't playing.
Yep.
Cody Ceci.
That's not where you want him.
That's the other side of the blue line, too. He's a right shot. You know, Chris Russell, are you going to play him more minutes than Duncan Keith? I mean, yes, you can tell me that he's not going to have the exact same role he's had in Chicago, sure. But he's going to be asked to play against pretty good matchups, every night, or pretty good players. Bad matchup for him. But so that mixed in with Mike Smith, I think, is the scariest part.
Yeah, I forgot all about Larson.
Is the fact you've got that defense core with a missing Adam Larson playing in front of a 39-year-old, soon-to-be 40-year-old Mike Smith.
Yeah, because right now, who do you trust playing those top minutes right
Nurse.
Now? That's it. And like Barry had a nice first year in Edmonton, but again, I don't love
defensively,
him there. Duncan Keith, same thing at his age and the last number of years. And you're right about CeCe. And not Russell. Like, you've got one guy that you trust, whereas last year you had two guys that you trusted. And when I was thinking about the blue line, I was thinking about the fact that they're basically the same and they lost Ethan Bear. I totally forgot about Adam Larson leaving for Seattle, which makes them, I think, significantly worse on the back than they were, and the same in net. So they're better at forward. They're worse on the back. It's really, in a lot of ways, it's kind of a mirror of what we're talking about down here. Better up front, worse on the back, and pretty much the same in net, Riddick being swapped for Vladar. And that's why I know that Calgary doesn't have McDavid, Calgary doesn't have Draisaitl, and they don't have players of that caliber, sure. But that's why when you know, when we're talking and you say Vegas 1, Edmonton 2, I'm not even quite ready to go Edmonton 2. I have them in the mix with everybody else.
I'm not either. The only reason I have them, you know, essentially penciled in that spot is because of the two guys we started talking about. When you've got two players that are guaranteed to be top five in NHL scoring, well, you're going to win some games, but is it going to be enough? And I think when you look at the division, Pat, like, you can't tell me that McDavid and Draisaitl aren't going to feast on the Anaheims and the San Jose's of the world, right? Like, they're going to have their nights. And hypothetically, if we're being honest with it, McDavid and Draisaitl haven't struggled a lot of nights against Calgary. Now,
no, they have not.
It could be different this year with the Daryl Sutter system, for sure. And the style that Sutter wants them to play, it might be a little bit less run and gun in those games. But history tells us that McDavid, you know, likes playing against Calgary, plays pretty well against the Calgary Flames. So if that's what's, you know, going to happen, as long as you've got those two guys, you've got a chance. But do I see them penned in and guaranteed as a number two? No, I'm not confident in saying that because there's so much that can go wrong.
Well, I'll play you the clip one more time from Connor McDavid as we close out the segment.
You've been a patient guy throughout this rebuilding process. Are you still in that headspace, or are you thinking, like, you know, the time is now here to get this thing rolling?
Definitely thinking the time is now. I think I'm 24 years old. You know, Nursey and Dry are, you know, 25, 26 years old. Nuge, you know, 28. So, you know, the old excuse that, you know, we're young guys is no longer. So, you know, for us as a group, I think the time is now to start really pushing this thing. You know, Kenny's done his job and gone out and got pieces and added some things. And like I said, it's on us now to put the thing together.
And to, like, we talked about this and really, you know, there's two texts that come in. One from Tony. He's got his friends, girlfriend, parents, and agent all in his ear. How much more money can he make in a big market? Well, first of all, he's the highest paid player in the league, so I don't know if we're really worried about him making more money.
I don't know how much money Connor left on the table.
And he didn't leave any money. And to, you know, he's still making good money endorsements in Edmonton. I don't care where you play. If you're as good as Connor McDavid, you're getting endorsement deals. Nike and BioSteel and Under Armour don't give a crap where you're playing.
And Rogers.
They don't care.
Hey, Connor, it's mess.
And then this one, the better question is, if they don't make it out of the first round with this rule, will McDavid look to be looking to move on? No, I don't think he will be.
Two other texts at 960-960. If McDavid's tired of losing, he probably should have took less money. Anywhere he goes, he comes the big price tag, and it's going to eliminate other players that are valuable. That's why teams with on average lesser paid players are winning the cup, like Tampa Bay, because they don't have any massive contracts comparatively. And it's also the reason why Boston is able to compete.
Or just get a GM who spends the money in the right spots, but it's just me.
Fair.
And you know, maybe not say, yeah, we'll take all of Duncan Keith's salary, but again, just me.
See, I am more critical of other contracts than I am of the McDavid contract. I mean, he's the best player in the world. And
he's not really, comparative to other players that are really good, he's not making 15. He's making 12.5. He's only got 15% of the cap. It's not like we're talking about a guy who's completely handcuffed the team. There's guys on the team making $8.5 million. Like, he's not handcuffing the Oilers.
Yeah.
Just spend the money in better areas.
I think McDavid will finally get over the playoff hump because he'll finally be able to learn from Crosby at the Olympics. Even Lemieux needed to play with Gretzky, Messier, etc. before he learned how to win. We'll see what the Olympic experience is like for Connor McDavid. Oh, I think just, you can pen putting, him in on the team.
We're just
Canada.
Putting him on the team, eh?
Can
Army?
You imagine, like, if there's a... No, you know what? We don't... Remember, in 2006, they left Crosby off that roster in 2006 for no good reason because they wanted to stick
with...
No, he
was a rookie, though. If McDavid was a rookie, then you know, you could see the comparison. Crosby was a rookie, though. Do I agree they should have left him off? No. I think everybody, if you're looking at it honestly and objectively, they were way too loyal to 02 in 06.
And way too loyal to 02 and 04.
Correct.
Because it was basically the same team that won the World Cup.
And it's like, oh, we're on the big ice and we can't skate. Oh, that's weird.
Like, they brought... And again, no knock to some of these players. But, I mean, I think Crosby could have gone over, you know, Nash and Le Cavalier and Heatley and... Draper, and I could have seen a world where he went over those guys. He was still en route to a 102-point season as a rookie. He probably still should have been on that team. I don't think they'll do that with McDavid, to make a long story short. Would you like to win a trip to Canmore with Pinder and Luke Elvey and hang out at the brand new golf experience, Can Golf? Well, we've got that opportunity for you. If you go to sportsnet.ca/960 and click on the contest tabs, you can win that trip later on this month. It includes the golf experience and full food experience at Can Golf on September 28th, overnight stay at the Coast Canmore Hotel and Conference Center, and $250 at Can Golf to go back there again. All brought to you by the brand new experience, Can Golf, the new hotspot in Canmore, featuring 5 state-of-the-art simulators, a best-of-the-bow food and drinks menu, plus an event space boasting spectacular mountain views. This is The Big Show and the Sports Drive at 5 on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hey Calgary, let's drive. This is the Sports Drive at 5 on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
We're wrapping up the Sports Drive and the Big Show resumes after 6. We're going till 7 tonight. We didn't get on until about 4 o'clock after the Jays Rays game. Toronto winning 6-3, your final score. I don't think Seattle's coming back. However, runner on second, bottom 10, they trail the Red Sox 9-3 in Seattle. No outs. And the Yankees have opened up a 2-0 lead in Baltimore. That game, bottom of the third inning. We'll keep you abreast on those two games because they do impact Toronto and their playoff hopes. How do we do
and
on the
Baltimore's
waiver list?
I mean, they're only 34 and a half games back.
Of the wild card. Yeah. I think they're like 50 games back.
43.
How do we do on the waiver wire last night or this morning? Eli Mitchell was the guy. One league, he went for a full fab budget, $100.
What?
Yeah. And I was talking to somebody else, and that happened to them. Like, I know of a number of leagues where Mitchell went for the full-on budget of $100 or $200 or whatever you've got. So Mitchell was the guy. He was already taken in our league. I got him in another league that doesn't have a budget, so it's just waiver priority, and I got smoked in week one, so I had top priority, so I got Mitchell without having to use anything, except I lost my waiver priority, so I got him. I know I was taking a hard time on the morning show for spending 18 of my 100 on Patterson of the Falcons, but I am so hurting at running back with the loss of Raheem Mostert in San Francisco. I needed something. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to put enough that I know I'm not going to be outbid. Was it an overpay? 100%. Did I need to make sure I had somebody else who played the running back position? Yes. So admittedly an overpay, but I wasn't going to risk it because I needed the player. So I know I took a hard time, but that was my justification. It's not that much. $18 a year fab, it's fine.
Yeah, my one league, somebody won the bidding for Eli Mitchell was $63. Other league, $65. I was way off on that. I only bid $12. I did have a big offer in that turns out wouldn't have won it anyways. But this is a league where it's two running backs and three receivers. There's no flex. And I already have.
No flex.
I've got Christian McCaffrey, Darrell Henderson, and DeAndre Swift. So it's not like I was desperate for running back at this point. And with three receivers, I put in an $18 bid, won it by three, for Tim Patrick of the Denver Broncos, who, was another big waiver wire ad this week. I won the bidding for Eli Mitchell in a different league. I believe the winning bid, we have $45 on that one for Eli Mitchell, but in that league, I was desperate for running back. So I kind of went all in on Eli Mitchell. Of course, our, 960 league Boomer had him already, so there was no bidding for Eli Mitchell's services. And then that's pretty much how I wound up. I got Tim Patrick in a couple of leagues because, again, it was
either, he gone in our league too?
Either him or I believe I got him in our league.
Okay.
So it was either him or KJ Hamler as the pickups with the Jerry Jeudy injury. So that's kind of what you're looking at when it comes to the waiver wire pickups. I didn't really go all in. I didn't go for Jameis Winston in any leagues. He was available in our league, I believe. I don't know if somebody picked him up, but yeah. So Waiver wire was good, and excited and looking forward to week number two.
See, if you're in, like, specifically if you're in a super deep league, like if you're in a 14 or a 16 team league, and you're hurting at running back, like if you lost Mostert and he was your RB2, and you're in a 16 team league, you were feeling pretty good. But then you lose one guy, and then you're screwed. So I can see in a deep league why you'd blow most of or all of your budget on one guy, even in week one, because you have no guarantee that another guy that could be a potential top of the depth chart back is going to pop up. It was like, was it week one, week two last year? Nyheim Hines in Indy was the same thing. People were blowing that budget everywhere. And he had a pretty decent year. Didn't turn into a top of the depth chart running back, but I can understand why you would do that anyway. I don't know if Premier Kenny has started his news conference or not. It's 3 minutes after the hour, so probably not. We will get an update from our friends at 660 News later on this hour if you want to stick with us. However, if you're on your drive home right now and you want to tune in to the Premier, we're not going to be offended if you switch over. 660 News has the live news conference with Premier Kenny. If you don't want to miss it, switch over now. If you want to risk it, you got some time. But 660 News will be covering that live with the Premier announcing new restrictions, new rules. I don't even know what is being announced, but new things being announced with COVID-19.
And rumors are you're going to want to hear it.
Yes, exactly. We're live in the Iconic Studio this Wednesday afternoon / evening. Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Burner Management, it's Iconic. Follow them on Twitter at Iconic EC. The Stampeders in the spotlight next. Head coach Dave Dickinson serving as the Stamps Report up next.
Press conference just started, for those wondering.
Ooh, it has started now. Get yourself over to 660 News if you want to listen now. Otherwise, we'll keep you updated as the evening goes along. Big Show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Big Show rolls on as we are going an hour late today. We're on with you until 7 o'clock. Premier Jason Kenney is addressing the province right now on our sister station, 660 News. If you are interested in what's coming next, the vaccine mandates, restrictions, so on and so forth, all over at 660 News. And we will update you as soon as everything is clear and as soon as we know all of what has been announced today. Calgary Stampeders coming off a 32-16 win over Edmonton last weekend. They get set for Hamilton this weekend on the road. Our Stampeders report this day features head coach Dave Dickinson in conversation with Boomer, Rhett, and Pinder this morning. Here's the head coach of the Calgary Stampeders, Dave Dickinson.
Coach, how are we feeling from last week to this week? How are you feeling?
Better. Yeah, better. And also, yeah, I finally caught my breath. It was a pretty intense game. I felt like I definitely lost a few pounds pacing that sideline.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because you're a very – we bring you on here and it's a kind of an, aw, shucks, good old guy from Montana, easy going. I loved every minute of it. There were some fist pumps in our living room watching that game going back. But you were as intense for a regular season game as I think I've ever seen. That meant a ton to you, right?
Well, they all should mean the same, but you kind of know where you're at. And you know you're buried if you lose that game. And it's going to be maybe a hole you can't get out of. And so, and I just felt we needed it, and we were playing well enough, and the energy was there, and we needed to win that game just for the psyche of our club. So I summoned my inner Rhett Warner, and I went to work and got a little emotions flowing, and off we go. But it was a little frustrating because we made a couple errors late, and we were right there to put our stamp on it and basically take over the game, and we just never could until Renee's last field goal.
How about that, Rhett? Impacting coaches and athletes all over.
Well, it's a legacy, right?
It is, yeah.
See that sort of work ethic.
Yeah. And
that's what you're known for.
Yeah. Dave, we saw some cursing, we saw some fist pumps, some cheering, and we saw some verbal exchanges with your quarterback. You don't like time count violations, let alone two in near back-to-back series. Can you talk about the exchange with you and Bo? Bo was doing a lot of listening. You were controlling that conversation.
Yeah, that was my inner Daryl Sutter.
Okay, right, good.
There. Okay, so it was Bo and I. We are on the same page, but he knows that, you know, when the blood flows, probably best for just at times to take it. But it was just one of those situations there. You know, he hasn't played a lot, but you just can't do that, especially in the last 3 minutes of either half. And of course, I got myself kind of a little too fired up, but I wanted to make sure he knows we can't keep doing that. And, you know, it's a combination of a little bit too much maybe talking in the huddle, trying to figure out what the other team was doing and not having an awareness of the clock. So hopefully that doesn't happen again.
And, like you say, how much of that is rust? Because this is not Bo's first rodeo. He's pretty good at knowing where the clock is at, having time count. That just doesn't happen to him. And he had two that cost you, obviously, you lost a down in a very short amount of time. Is that just rust?
Yeah, and, you know, it was different. They had coverages that we weren't expecting, and a lot of times that doesn't happen on a back-to-back of 5 days because you only have really one practice. So you might have tweaks here or there, but they definitely switched up their ammo on us. And that doesn't totally shock me because we had a really good Labor Day plan. I mean, offensively, we kind of had a beat on what they're doing. So they definitely changed it up and gave us some issues, and it was, you know, I think messing with Bo's eyes a little bit. But it's better just to get the process going, make them stop us, make them see what we're doing versus always trying to figure out what they're doing. And ultimately, yeah, we'll hopefully not get into those time count issues again.
Just want to stay with the offense because I think we'll talk more about the defense at length in a moment. But getting Bo back, he struggled, obviously, as you kind of just elaborated. I thought it was interesting. Over the years, Bo has done so much to acclimatize younger receivers as they come in, trying to do a little bit extra. And it was very deliberate watching Bo throw. You could tell that there were some nerves. It was very uncharacteristic of him. It was this time his receivers, KJ for sure, but the receivers were really going out of their way to help Bo and make those catches for the most part. It was kind of a role reversal.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he just didn't have his timing early. There were some open receivers. And once you don't, you know, if you don't hit your early throws, a lot of times you don't get any rhythm. You can't really, you know, work on your timing and work on your accuracy and work on your pocket presence because you're off the field. So you got it rolling, though. And like I said, KJ made some great plays for him, but Bo also made probably two or three that you can't even really see the receiver behind the defender. He just zings it in right off the linebacker's ear and the other safety's driving and KJ comes down with it, or he just gives it air and KJ just basically goes up and takes it from the guys. So, you know, KJ, big story. We could talk Bo and I was really happy to have him back, but KJ's now taking his game back to where he was, which is a premier receiver in the CFL. Great story. Back from the huge injury, and now I really feel like he's just being himself, having fun, and he's very dangerous out there.
Yeah, took a lick and got right back up and just continued. Was that the play call at the end for a long bomb touchdown, or how did that play develop?
It was. I mean, I felt like, okay, so we're in a season series. We only play them twice. They beat us by 12. We were up by 9. I felt like even a negative play with the time where it was at wasn't going to be enough for them to score twice. It just was a situation I felt we had to do. And, yeah, we knew we were going to just throw it at some point. We didn't want to Hail Mary, but we had a route called. But yeah. Josh Huff, actually, he was supposed to run a corner. He ran a post. So now we got a little bit of log jam there. Maybe it worked in our favor because he kind of knocked some of their guys off. But KJ just went up, took it, and scored. And, you know, I don't know if it's going to matter. I really don't. But it does help us. I mean, right now, at least, even though we're semi-tied with them on points, they have a game in hand. Now we got the tiebreaker. It could be the play that gets us in the playoffs or gets us a higher seed. And, you know, for me, it was also a great way to finish a game. We've had trouble sometimes keeping that momentum and felt good about it.
I like the little dance with the elk antlers at the end. I don't know if he had that, cooked up, but if that was right off the cuff, very creative.
I'm sure he probably would working on that. He's usually you don't just come up with something like that in the last 10 seconds, but I think that he has some good moves. He has a good dance moves. He's got a couple of his go-tos that I think that are definitely profiled throughout the league, and hopefully he's using a lot of dance moves again this week.
Dave Dickinson, head coach of the Stamps, is our guest. Now, 5 weeks into the season, Dave, we talked a lot about, are you getting enough pressure on the opposing quarterback? It's underneath, passes are being too easily caught for first downs, for the gains that they need to get, the 8 yards they need, the 8 yards they get, and even some deep plays. I don't want to say you called out your defense. You kind of did, but it was nothing. You just let them know. And they responded with, I think, by far and away, their best game of the season. Start with, I guess, the linebackers, because if it was pressure on the QB you wanted, you got it. What was the difference between Labor Day and the rematch?
Well, I don't know, to be honest, but I did. I didn't put him. I call him out, but I put him on notice. I mean, we gotta. If we ain't making plays, we gotta try new guys. And I love our team because I think they do care, and they want to be the best. We just weren't getting the job done, and it wasn't effort. I mean, I'm telling you, we were trying hard. It was more about just going and trusting what you've seen and having a little more faith and confidence that you can get the job done. And once we started getting home. And what I, you know, kind of letting Trevor Harris feel us, then it was almost like that, just like was relief from the guys. All of a sudden, we just got better and better and better. And our back end, like you said, I thought improved. I didn't see a lot of guys running free like we did on Labor Day. We tackled well. And talking linebackers, that's been a strength of our team. Really, there hasn't been a game where that group hasn't performed well. So when you put all three phases together, you're getting more pass rush. That's better, obviously, for the DBs. You're tackling well. You're putting them on their heels. I thought we did control the line of scrimmage. That's how we need to play each and every game.
And I'll tell you, Stephon Banks, the day he had was outstanding. He pretty quick for a guy who's 260 pounds. Tell us about this rookie and what he's bringing right now, because he was tremendous.
Yeah, you're right. He works super hard. He even admitted in the CFL game he's got to lighten up a little bit, and he's got to get his legs under. But his effort was unmatched. You know, Lamb had 3 sacks as well, so I don't want to discount Sean's performance on that as well. I thought both our interior guys were causing havoc. But the play that made it stand out the most for Banks is the last play of the game. We're up by 16. They just do a simple handoff. The guy goes around the edge. There's no one there. Wilder runs 15, 18 yards. And who's chasing him and tackling from behind is Steph. And to me, that just shows you what he's all about. I mean, doesn't take a play off. He wants to be the best. He just keeps playing and keeps playing and keeps playing. And then, obviously, the results came. So, to me, that was the play that I loved seeing the most because he just kept playing. He wasn't taking – he wasn't going to say, oh, I have a great game going right here. Let me just get on the bus. He kept playing. Those are the guys I want.
And there was something fierce from that crew. Like you say, they got better and better. They really fed off of one another. I think – there are games where maybe linebackers will get through and cause havoc for the quarterbacks, but those guys, they were feeding off. They were Lemon was getting Banks going, and Banks was getting Rose going. Like they were ferocious. It was infectious for them as a group.
Well, we had 7 sacks, which was more than double of our other previous 5 games. There's 3 going in the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, like to me, it's just like it shows you what you can do, though. It shows you what you can be, and it shows you what we need to be. So the best teams are always around the other team's quarterback. It's the same thing. If you let a goalie see the puck all the time, he's going to make stops. Well, get your butt on this quarterback. Make sure he knows you're there. And then, like you said, get his eyes on you instead of downfield, and that's where the results will happen.
Maybe they just had better coaching this week.
Because
like you said, the coaches need to do a better – maybe you guys just did a better job with them.
So you're calling Mace out? I could bring him on the
line. No, not at all. No, I'm giving him
especially
credit.
Especially not him.
Yeah. The alley?
No, I don't need that at all. I don't need
– the smaller coaches are the ones we were talking about.
No, with Mace, I'm just – let's get turkeys at Christmas and Thanksgiving. That's all I need to do with Corey Mace. Nothing more.
What can you tell us about the O-line heading into Hamilton, Dave? You had Ucambray Williams limited in practice yesterday.
It's been limited for a while. He had a little he's got knee soreness, and we don't have anyone else healthy on the entire team that can even play. So it's been crazy. That position, for some reason, gets beat up the most on our team. I'm very jealous. I heard of stat Winnipeg's guys have been the same 5 have been together for every play this year. Very jealous about that. And I think offensive lines that play well have to stay together. So we have to try to get some continuity. I need UW to play, but obviously he has to play with confidence in his leg. We've been mixing and matching. Nila went from basically on the street, not playing, to right tackle. Now he's playing left tackle. We got a rookie in at right tackle. New guards. We need to play together and we need to grow. But I do think that they're moving people. I thought we were pretty good in pass pro. I mean, like you said, we had a little bit of traffic on Bo, but he was able to step into his throws and make his throws. And that was a good D-line we faced. So, once again, big challenge at Hamilton. They've always, to me, they've got the size and the power inside and the speed with Jagaire Davis on the outside. So it'll be a big test this week.
And you won't know who's playing quarterback as of yet. What does that do for preparation versus a regular week where you'd have a healthy Dane Evans in theory?
Yeah, I mean, I believe this. I think you just play them. I don't think you necessarily try to figure out what they're going to do with a different guy or who's going to play. I think you just try to decide what system you're going to see. You know, there is probably two offensive type of things. You know, it's like when you're playing Streveler and Kolaris, you can't play the quarterbacks the same, and I don't think you're going to play potentially Dane the same as you would Mazzoli when we go into it. I think Mazzoli would play. That's why I say Mazzoli on that.
Yeah.
But if Watford's in there, then he got to play him too as well. But he's a pretty good quarterback still. I think obviously he's had games where he's very streaky and can be 20, 22 or 3 completions in a row. Who's ever there, we got to make sure, like you say, they know we're in Hamilton and we're here to play, and we got to make him uncomfortable.
Head coach Dave Dickinson with Boomer, Rhett, and Pinder this morning. He joins the boys just after 7 a.m. every Wednesday. The head coach of the Calgary Stampeders on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Come watch the football game and enjoy their game day specials. Open for dining and, as always, takeout. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar is at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Stamps, Tiger Cats on Saturday. We still don't know who is starting at quarterback for Hamilton. We won't find out until Friday.
Do you think
Friday.
They're just gamesmanship? Like, there's no way Mazzoli's playing.
That's my gut. I'll be surprised if Mazzoli
ends
up
playing. Oh, he might play. Okay,
well, basically, they said, we'll see how he feels on Friday and then make an announcement.
Sure.
I think it's going to be Watford. He's been the guy taking most of the reps, so we'll see. We'll see. Stamps,
if it's Mazzoli, I like the Stamps even more, so I'll put it that way.
More than Watford?
Well, if he's not taking any reps at practice,
that's fair. No, that's fair. That's a very fair point. I chose at CFL.ca, I chose the Stamps because the news of Dane Evans. I'm like, I don't like either quarterback if it's not Evans. So
it's always your boy.
Used to be. He's been brutal this year. Like, I can't say he was my boy prior to him missing 2 years of football. And now he's been no good this year. Dane Evans is clearly the better quarterback right now. Here's what we're gonna do. We'll take a break. We'll try to look. The what has been announced today by the province is hard to wrap your head around. We'll try and make it make sense to you because you're smarter than I am, and I'm trying to make it make sense for me and what exactly is and has not happened. We'll also bring in our friends from 660 News and give you what it might or might not mean for sports in this city, in this province. Plus, lots more to get to before we get to 7 o'clock. Big Show is rolling till 7 tonight on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. All right, extended edition of the Big Show rolls on. So, during Dave Dickinson was listening to the Premier and then listening to Health Minister Mr. Shandro, I got to say, look, we don't get political. We try to stay away from the politics on this show. But I will say that I felt like I was watching an infomercial or something only because Minister Shandro went through all these different restrictions and what is happening tomorrow and what is happening September 20th. And I encourage you for more information because we're not going to be able to decipher all this for you. We're really poor at it. But went through all these different restrictions on indoor dining and gyms and social gatherings and all of that. Said they're either taking place or coming into effect September 16th or September 20th, and then said none of that applies if you opt into this restriction exemption program. So essentially what they've done is if you opt into the restriction exemption program, you are not under the restrictions that have been announced today. They just left that till the end. So I'm sitting there listening to all these. I'm like, oh my goodness, we're going back to December. This is, and then that part, you're like, oh, okay, I'm vaccinated. So that, okay, this is a little bit different. Anyway, I bring this up because we were talking, Will, like, we're like, what does this mean for the Stampeders? What does this mean for the Flames? What does this mean for the Oilers? What does this mean for the Elks? So on and so forth. But everything that I have read on the Government of Alberta website, and the Flames have already announced their own vaccine-proof system, it doesn't really feel like there's going to be anything different. Like, if you're the Flames, you just operate as per normal because they have already come up with their own proof of vaccine system, so they obviously are going to opt into this restriction exemption program, right? That's kind of how I understand it. And again, my brain is very small, but that's kind of what I have been able to decipher.
Again, the vaccine debate is ridiculous. It's so political that we don't need to get into it. But essentially, this government refuses, for whatever reason, to go down the vaccine mandate or vaccine passport road. They essentially did that today without admitting that they're going down that road. It's a vaccine mandate without calling it a vaccine mandate, because they're telling
it's kind
businesses
of putting the choice on the business.
It's 100%.
Right?
They're taking it out of their hands. Yep. So, 270 patients in ICU is the highest ever in Alberta history right now.
Yeah,
by the way.
Again,
so best summer ever turns into best fall ever.
I don't know. And you know, like, without getting too political, without getting too like, this is what I believe or whatever, at least it's something. And it's more than nothing.
Jason Kenney said it today. I mean, it got to a point where they couldn't continue to do nothing. Yeah. This province is on fire. The COVID rates are the highest in the country for a reason. And there was 24 deaths in the last 24 hours. I mean, it's about going back to January with the death count.
And honestly, like, I am proudly fully vaccinated, and I shed a tear.
You got it tattooed on your head. It's very weird.
But no, that's something else.
I am vaccinated. Right in your forehead, you got it tattooed. You were tired of waiting, right? For
that's my vaccine passport. I just tattooed it on my.
I am vaccinated.
No, I'm proudly vaccinated. I shed a tear when I got my first shot. Like, it was like I'm very proudly double shot and all of that. Nothing has fallen off. I don't want to get into the debate, but I have no problem with this because I've got my shot and I'm happy that I've gotten my shot. And I think that you should get your shot. I really do. If you don't, that's your choice. We don't have to talk about it, and we don't have to get into it. But if I were to say, hey, should I get it? Yeah, I think you should, because it's everybody that I know that has got it. Every single person. Nothing. Your arm hurt for a little bit, and you moved on with your life. Anyway, without getting into it, the reason I bring it up is because
to those on the text line, I don't know. There's nothing on youth sports that I could decipher or hear about, so I don't know about youth sports. Adult sports are done as of now, and again, like I just talked to you, I was off the air, Pat. I don't know if that you know if you're in a Calgary Sport and Social Club league, if you're in a beer league, hockey league, I don't know what that means. Like, that's how confusing the press conference
is. It's confusing, but I'm on the Government of Alberta website right now, and it says adult over 18 sport, fitness, recreation, and performance activities. Following restrictions apply unless the facility or program implements the restrictions exemption program.
You'd have to call your youth sports organization.
I
don't know.
Indoor, and it looks like youth sports continues outdoor without any restrictions, and indoor classes, training, competitions are permitted with symptom screening, physical distancing when you're not doing the sport, and masking while you're not doing the sport. So looks like youth sport continues pretty much untouched. The only difference is spectator attendance is restricted to a third of fire code.
Which makes sense because they're not closing youth schools. So
yeah. So youth sports looks like pretty much unchanged. Adult sports, if the facility or program, for instance, CSEC, like you mentioned, if they were to opt into the restriction exemption program, they would be able to continue as per normal. If a facility decides not to, then these restrictions would apply to them. It's very convoluted. It's very hard to wrap your head around. But I think everything that I've been able to decipher from the website, from what I've heard, is that it's on track for fans to be able to be back at McMahon Stadium as they have been. McMahon's going to be the first one that goes through the of the CSCC properties that goes through the proof of vaccine. So that'll be able to continue as they had thought because they're opting into this. Same with the Flames, same with the Oilers, so on and so forth. That's kind of what I've been able to decipher. More on this as the program goes along. And again, we try not to get into the politics stuff and the news stuff, but this obviously impacts what we do in sports. And we'll get a complete rundown before we're done. We'll take a break. When we come back to some hockey talk, and a reminder that we're live on location tomorrow at the Calgary Flames Alumni Masters Golf Tournament at Prittis Greens Golf and Country Club. We are there to help support what the alumni does in this community each and every year, pandemic or no pandemic. These guys are unbelievable. And this tournament, since its inception in 1994, has raised more than $2.7 million for Calgary charities. Since 2011, the charity of choice has been Cerebral Palsy Kids and Families, where since 2011, more than 1,800 kids living with CP have been able to know the simple joy of riding a bike. It's truly unbelievable what the folks at the alumni have done. We're happy to be out there. And if you'd like to get involved with the golf tournament and if you'd like to help raise money for CP Kids and Families, go to calgarycp.org today and you can bid on the auction items there. And all proceeds going to CP Kids and Families. Once again, calgarycp.org. We'll be live at Prittis Greens and Golf and Country Club tomorrow for both the morning and the afternoon show. Big show wraps when we come back. We're taking it to 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app, this is The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
In just a second, there is one team in the NHL that currently has two high-profile RFAs unsigned. What the hell are they going to do? But first, we tried with Will's normal-sized brain and my pea-sized brain. We tried to sift through the new COVID-19 restrictions and the restriction exemption program in the last segment, what it means to you, the sports fan, or you, the athlete in this province. I think we did an okay job. Our friends over at 660 News doing a better job. Let's bring in Craig Lester from our sister station, 660 News, for the latest with COVID-19 in this province. Craig?
Pat, the Premier has declared a state of public health emergency in response to the rising COVID-19 numbers in the province. Jason Kenney is calling it a crisis of the unvaccinated because 90% of the people in the ICU are unvaxxed. The province is implementing a vaccine passport system, which it is calling the Restriction Exemption Program. Vaccine-eligible individuals will be required to provide government-issued proof of immunization or a negatively privately paid COVID-19 test from within the previous 72 hours to access a variety of businesses and facilities throughout the province. That includes everyone aged 12 years and older. As of tonight at midnight, in terms of restrictions, there will be capacity limits on indoor social gatherings and physical distancing required. Private indoor social gatherings for vaccinated will be limited to only those of the same household to a maximum of 10. For people that are unvaccinated, those gatherings will not be allowed. A mandatory work-from-home order is once again in place. For places of worship, masking will be required again, and they will be limited to one-third of capacity. There will be mandatory masking for grades 4 and up in schools, and they will be going back to class cohorts. As of September 20th, indoor weddings, funerals will have a capacity of 50% or 50 people, whichever comes first. Outdoors will be limited to 200 people. All restaurants, bars, and pubs will close indoor dining. Outdoor dining will be limited to a max of 6 people. This all comes following news there were 24 new COVID-19 deaths in the past 24 hours in Alberta. The number of people in hospitals now stands at 877, which is up 55 from yesterday, 218 of which are in the ICU. That's an increase of 6 day over day. There are 1,609 new COVID-19 cases reported in the province. For more details, go to 660citynews.com. I'm Craig Lester.
Thank you, Craig, and a lot of information in there. If you just caught on or just jumped in at the end of what Craig was saying there, all those restrictions are going into place either tomorrow or September 20th. However, if you have a proof of vaccine program, whether you're a gym, a restaurant, a bar, a movie theater, if you opt into this restriction exemption program, then you are exempt from those restrictions that you heard at the end. So that is kind of the situation that we're moving into starting tomorrow at 12:01 a.m. So in less than 6 hours, this starts with the restriction exemption program. Okay, enough COVID to wrap the show. Steinberg and Nalt along with you. We're going to the top of the hour today. Will, we talked about some of the high-profile RFAs that still remain, and there are some. Kirill Kaprizov, it's a big name. Robert Thomas in St. Louis, Nolan Patrick in Las Vegas. There are some big names still on the board as restricted free agents. However, no team has two high-profile restricted free agents except the Vancouver Canucks, who have both Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson unsigned as it stands right now. We talked a little bit about this earlier in the week.
Disrespect to Logan Brown in Ottawa. No, just kidding.
Sorry, Logan. Sorry, Logan.
Played one game last year.
You've got the two biggest future pieces of your organization unsigned, a total of about $10.5 million of cap space and a little more wiggle room with LTIR when you go down that road. But they do not have a lot of options here when it comes to getting these two signed. Rick Dhaliwal in Vancouver, he reports today that neither sides are close with the Vancouver Canucks. So you don't have anything that seems like it's moving in the right direction. Will, you threw out the idea of one-year deals earlier this week, and that's not even crazy. Like, it's crazy, but it's actually realistic knowing the situation the Canucks find themselves in right now.
Yeah, I think it's an absolute realistic conversation just because even with LTIR used, are you going to be able to do two-year deals for those guys? I do... Again, unless you can somehow convince them to do two by $5 million a year, I have a hard time believing that because I think even for a lot of teams, Pat, that use LTIR, a lot of the times the team doesn't want to use all of that LTIR, certainly not on day one. So how close do you want to get to maxing out LTIR usage and getting right to the cap? I think that's not a question necessarily in Vancouver, but with their cap situation being what it is, is it best to kick the can down the road and address it again next summer when the situation is a little bit better? We mentioned it yesterday. You get rid of the Roberto Luongo recapture penalty of over $3 million. So there might be some more alleviation next summer. But, I think at this point, knowing what the player's value is to the team in both cases of Hughes and Pettersson, your best case scenario might be a one-year deal, because even a one-year deal, Pettersson could ask for $7 million. Why wouldn't he?
Why are you helping them out at this point?
And if you're Pettersson, I don't know if you're signing for 1 year at $5 million. Like, you know, with LTIR used, you're probably seeing Vancouver at about $14 million of cap space.
Well, just think about this. Pettersson, the last 3 years, 66 points in 71, 66 points in 68, 21 points in 26. So he's essentially a point-per-game player in his first 3 years in the NHL. Last year, the injuries. But he's essentially a point-per-game player at the age of 22.
Best offensive player on that team?
So is he not worth on an AAV $7 million? Yeah. On a one-year deal, the guy's worth $7 million. Sure he is.
So what are you going to do if you're Vancouver? I think that's all you can do at this point, unless you're moving more money out, which I don't know if you are.
The good news is for them is that you can keep it at around that. So say that $7 million is the bang-on number. You could keep it at that dollar figure for 2 or 3 years on a 2 or 3 year deal because you're not buying UFA years yet. Until you start, when you start buying UFA years, then it goes up. So you could keep it at that range for a few years anyway if you wanted to. I don't really think there's going to be a significant difference between 1 and 3 years for either Hughes or Pettersson. But what Jim Benning and Vancouver's poor cap management has done is force them into a spot where they can't sign their guys to what would be the ideal deal. Ideally, wouldn't you want your two franchise players signed on 8-year deals and have them for the better part of their 20s, their prime years, and at a cost certain figure? Of course you would. But Vancouver's put themselves in a spot where they really realistically can't do that. Maybe with one, but I don't even know if you can do it with one at this point.
Yeah, it's a tough spot to be in because, again, you're right up against it salary cap wise. You've already shedded a lot of money in the summer, and I think you have to, you know, for your organization, as you're looking to take that next step, you have to have both guys there on day one. And again, if you're the player, are you taking a 3-year deal at $7 million? Because you're probably worth more than that. And as you say, why would you help the team out? It's a really, really interesting spot for Vancouver, and I don't think there's an easy answer. And that's the reason why they remain unsigned. Because I think both players believe they're worth more than whatever's been put on the table by the Vancouver Canucks.
Yep. Do both of them start the season, you think?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm with you too. Like, I think they'll be able to get him done. I think they'll sign him to short term.
Do I think
deals.
They're there on day one of training camp? No.
No, I could see this going like the Matthew Tkachuk, Johnny Gaudreau route, where you might miss a good chunk of training. Like Matthew missed every preseason game except for one when he signed his latest deal, and Johnny missed everything. So I could see
and
it
had
easily
the worst
going
season
like
of his career.
That. He did. Yeah, he really struggled off the hop there. Also, that was the same year he broke his finger or whatever, Johnny Oven Mitt or whatever.
And Bill Guerin has had the same comments in Minnesota. He said that, you know, the 2 years he held out in his career were the two worst seasons of his career. I don't know if that was advice for Kaprizov, if that was leverage or what that was, but I think it's a real thing. You can be in as good shape as you want, Pat, and I believe that every player that is unsigned right now as an RFA is obviously been skating, they have been training, they're by all accounts ready.
Yep.
But missing training camp and not being there with your teammates has a massive effect. I don't think anybody can deny that.
Well, you can't replicate
no
practice pace. You can't replicate preseason game
and,
pace
and
unless
skating,
you're in them.
Skating with a college team or a junior team is just not the same.
No, it's exactly.
Like, that's no disrespect to those teams that, you know, will welcome those players in, but
they're not NHLers.
No.
So we'll see what Vancouver ends up doing. I'm with you. I think they'll get them signed, but they're not going to be on ideal contracts. And you can almost guarantee that Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson will get more on their AAVs on their next contract, not this one, but on their next contract, than they would have had you signed them to long-term deals now. But Vancouver can't do that. That's the situation they're in. For Riley, for Logo, for Will, I'm Pat. That'll do it for the program. We've been live all day in the Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Instrumentation, it's Iconic. Visit iconicec.ca to find out more. Join us tomorrow from Prentice Green's Golf and Country Club for the Calgary Flames Alumni Masters Golf Tournament. Be well. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. This has been the Big Show on the Sports Drive at 5. A little extra hour added on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.